February 22, 2007 CCSD meeting to order. I'd like to invite everyone to join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
At the last meeting.
Thank you. Do any of my colleagues have any additions, deletions, or pulled consent items?
I have one. A pulled item is under regular business 8E, the resolution 13-2007, authorizing the CB&I change order for the Pine Knolls Tank project. We're pulling that.
And I'm going to request that we pull consent agenda item 6A. And now I'd like to...
One more. 8F. Is that... Go to the cursor for that.
I've left this on the agenda so I could report to the board publicly what the status is. Okay. We do have a draft agreement. The Gracies have not seen it. And I just, so that's the sole purpose of leaving it on.
Thank you.
Excuse me, since we're pulling things, I have a question about the minutes of the last meeting. I could just ask that when we do it.
Joan, did you have a question about the minutes?
B, 6B.
Oh, you want to pull it? Okay. All right. That being any other additions or deletions or? Thank you. I'd like to move on, if we may, to agenda item 3. I'd like to introduce Assistant Fire
Chief. As he was one of my mentors when I first arrived here, and I'll never forget Paul throwing me a lifeline on a incident command scenario that we had like 1 or 2 weeks after I'd arrived here, and providing me with all kinds of valuable nuggets of information that I needed to know on how the operation worked. And Paul, I thank you for that. Whereas Reserve Lieutenant Paul Beaver joined the Cambria Fire CSD Fire Department in 1985 at the rank of Reserve Firefighter, and whereas Reserve Lieutenant Paul Beaver dedicated his time and energy to attend specialized training and courses to become a Reserve Fire Apparatus Engineer and eventually a Reserve Lieutenant for the Cambria CSD Fire Department and our community, and whereas Reserve Lieutenant Paul Beaver utilized his paramedic skills and training as well as film and video expertise to advance the mission and goals of the Cambria CSD Fire Department and benefit the Cambria community, and whereas Reserve Lieutenant Paul Beaver provided thousands of hours of duty officer coverage for the Cambria CSD Fire Department and the community to ensure the fire department was managed and operated efficiently, and whereas Reserve Lieutenant Paul Beaver joined the North Coast Ocean Rescue Team in 1994 and assisted with fundraising to purchase, outfit, and staff the first ocean rescue surf boat, and whereas Reserve Lieutenant Paul Beaver helped design the new Cambria CSD fire station, outfit the new station, and transition from the old 4039 Burton Drive station to our present location, and whereas Reserve Lieutenant Paul Beaver retired from the Cambria CSD Fire Department after 21 years of service in the Cambria CSD Fire Department and the Cambria Community Services District, residents and visitors to Cambria have benefited tremendously from his dedicated community service and support. Now, therefore, by virtue of the authority vested in me as Assistant Chief representing Elon Funky Baloo, President, and behalf of the Board of Directors and the staff of the Cambria Community Services District, I hereby extend to Reserve Lieutenant Paul Beaver on this 22nd day of February 2007 our...
The Fire and Rescue and Emergency Medical Services field is, we get lots and lots of thanks for what we do. And I have the pleasure of serving both with the Cambria Community Services District and also with the Cambria Community Healthcare District as a paramedic. And I get plenty of thanks for that, and I've had that over the years, and as we all do. And I just want to point out that those of us that are on the front lines or have been on the front lines, as it were, realize very completely that the work that we do is not possible without the work of staff on both districts, the clerical and administrative and managerial things that need to be done, and without the guidance of the board and the support of the board and the support of the community. So from our standpoint, I'd like to offer my thanks and, in general, the thanks of the emergency services field for your support in giving us the opportunity to serve. It's a real pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It should be acknowledged, I guess.
Mr. President, while we're on the subject of Paul Beaver, about 5 or 6 years ago, our youngest son had a what we thought was an emergency medical situation, and Paul was one of the paramedics who responded. And really great bedside manner, really great with calming the situation down, and want to personally thank you, Paul, for the great work you did. It turned out to be the world's most expensive stomach ache, but it wasn't an emergency at all. But when you're dealing with a mother who is convinced that it's something terrible, Paul had just the right touch.
Thank you.
And I noticed that in the back we have, in addition to the assistant fire chief, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of your colleagues. Is that true? Is there anyone I left out?
Somebody's sitting down.
Okay. Thank you for coming. Let's continue with the good things here. I would like to recognize our retiring finance manager, Patrick Bradley, for 10 years of service to the community. Finance manager Patrick Bradley was first employed by the Cambria Community Services District on August 22, 1988. He retired, and whereas Patrick was an excellent employee of the CCSD, performing his duties and responsibilities in a superior manner, reflecting credit upon the CCSD and being a fine example to his colleagues, less talk and more action. And whereas he also served on the ad hoc Citizens Finance Committee for Parks and Recreation, providing valuable input on potential funding sources for the CCSD Parks and Recreation Department. And whereas he was responsible for effectively managing expenditures on all CCSD grant-funded projects, as well as coordinating financial transactions for the Chevron MTBE settlement. And now, therefore, by virtue of the authority vested in me as president of the Board of Directors, and on behalf of the entire board, CCSD staff, and all Cambrians, on this day, February 22, 2007, I will be presenting this to Tammy because Patrick is unavailable, unfortunately, to be here today. This proclamation of public recognition, extending to him our deep appreciation for his long, distinguished service, and our best wishes for continued success in all of his future endeavors.
Yeah,
Just on behalf of Patrick, since he did make contact with me, he is traveling with his lovely wife, Jan, and was unable to be here today, and is planning future travel, so it was hard to pin him down on a date. He's quite a humble person and truly enjoyed working with us and this board and the coworkers he has on staff here, and I know he's most appreciative that you recognized him today. So on behalf of him, I thank you. And I will deliver this sometime next week if he returns.
Tammy, you're smooth. Okay.
Mr. President, I'd like to add something.
Sure.
Not only was Patrick extraordinarily capable in his job, he had a unique outlook, something that usual stereotype of bookkeepers and financial advisors, he had humor. He added some really good humor.
But anymore?
Huh?
It's
in short supply here, that's for sure.
I think I should add that I've worked with Patrick most of the time that I've been on the board, and he always, as you say, had
kind words and earned words. I see Deputy Sheriff Steve, would you mind joining us here and giving us a few words?
Good afternoon. Unfortunately, I never met Patrick, so I don't have anything to say about him, but I do have a few things that I'd like to say about Paul. I worked for the Cambria Community Healthcare District for the last 18 years as an EMT and went through the paramedic program, and Paul was one of my mentors and my FTOs and has instilled a lot of things into my life and my family's life, and we're definitely losing a huge asset to this community and have since he's retired. And then on a personal note, he helped me with my video career and kind of taking over where he's leaving off with helping make some videos and things for the community and for the department. So on behalf of my department and me personally, I'd like to thank Paul as well for all his contributions to the community. First thing I have to report on, last month I reported on the graffiti, and I asked the folks at Cambria to bear with us that we would solve it. We had suspects. It takes time, especially when you're dealing with cultural diversities and juveniles. I'm glad and happy to report that we did solve it. We have two confessions from juveniles. That case has been forwarded to the district attorney's office for prosecution, and so that's moving forward. So I wanted to assure you that we had wrapped up that case. And then the other thing is we've had another small rash of burglaries. They've included both residential and automobile. They're what we call smash and grabs, rocks through windows. You've heard me report about that in the past years where they take a rock or something like that and throw it through a window. They're in the car maybe 10, 15, 20 seconds. They take the item that they saw from the outside of the exterior. They don't rummage through the car. They take portable DVD players, Sony PlayStation portables, CDs, things of that nature. And those items were also similarly taken from a residential burglary here in Cambria. So we have suspects. Again, we're working on it. I have the utmost confidence in the department and the deputies that are working on it, and I think we'll be able to come to a quick resolve on that. Other than that, we have the Amgen race about to go by here shortly in another hour or so, so I don't need to go to that. Any questions or comments?
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks.
Tammy, you prepared to give us your general manager's report?
Yes, I am. Just since last month on the build-out reduction program, Wayne and Art and I have gone now to the Chamber of Commerce here in Cambria. Also, as information, Wayne Perrick, as the chair of the Citizens Finance Committee for the build-out reduction program, is planning to regroup his committee and provide a status and get some communications from them as well as to what they might be doing within the community and what's a good status report for the BRP. The next item was the long-term financial management plan. Just to report, we've been working behind the scenes as staff with Black & Veatch, and we propose that at next month's meeting we will be bringing to you and for community public input the utility rates. And what they're going to look like in the financing model. So as a pre-announcement, that is scheduled for the meeting on March 22nd, tentatively now. We're going to be working with them here in the next week or two to go over, fine-tune, and make sure that we've got everything included within the capital improvement program as projected. and then they will be here as one of their first public meetings. There will probably be at least, I know there's at least one more, if not two more, that they will be here to present those. It will just be the utility rates at this time. They are finishing work on the fees, so they may have the fees that are associated with utilities together by next month. Otherwise, you'll see those in the coming months as well, the reports. Just a reminder to the public that Mission Country has scheduled their spring cleanup. It is the week of April 9th. So for those of us watching at home or here in the audience, this is an opportunity. If you have extra garbage or recycling or yard waste, you can put that out on the curb on the same day as your trash day, and they'll pick it up at no charge. Obviously, if you have larger, bulky items, they can be picked up at a nominal charge. You just need to call Mission Country at 927-4995 and schedule it. Under Parks and Recreation, our chair, Michael Thompson, could not be here, and neither could our vice chair. She was out of the community today. But what happened at their last meeting on February 6th is the chair replaced a couple of committee chair people because of the retirement of Jack Breglio and then the expiration of Steve Figler's term. So as of now, he announced and confirmed the committee assignments being the Parks Committee chaired by Bob Kelly and co-chaired by Jeff Miller, and the Recreation Committee chaired by Steve Niffen. The Open Space Committee and the Forest Committee representative is chaired by Ben Bolden, and the Trails Committee is chaired by Gail Robinette. For the public's information, the next PROS Commission meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, March 6th at 10 o'clock in the CCSD Suite 204. And finally, the Citizens Recreation Committee that was appointed by this board, there is a report being finalized, and we will be reviewing it on staff and potentially presenting it to the PROS Commission at an employee appreciation dinner every year. We did it a couple of weeks ago. We had one of the largest turnouts here. Each and every board member was present, and I do want to acknowledge publicly the hard work that each and every staff member does here for the CCSD. We're quite unique in that we're very small, and we're pretty multitasked, so it's not surprising if you might see somebody working outside of what they regularly do. I occasionally answer the front phone at the front desk or take a payment if you come by the office, and we're very proud to serve this community, and I want to extend again my appreciation for working with a really, really good team of employees and hope that we have a really, really good year again this year. So thank you.
Thank you. Bob, are you ready for your... Sure.
Tammy, anything you can tell us about the EIR for the Fiscalini Ranch?
The environmental impact review is in an administrative draft form right now, and we are reviewing it as staff before it gets released, and we have yet to put together a timeline. I'm looking forward to getting that accomplished in the next couple of weeks. At the same time, we have the rather thick 3 to 4 inch administrative draft for the Water Master Plan EIR, and it kind of bumped it a little and took priority. So we have a lot of review work right now at a staff level to get these things reviewed and fine-tuned so they can be released for public review.
Thank you.
Bob, are you ready for your district engineer's report?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. I'll be brief. On the Water Master Plan EIR, I'm still going through sections that are being developed by RBF. I expect to get one more new section towards the end of this week. So that progress, although slow, is continuing. And at the same time, trying to compare that with the draft EIR on the Fiscalini Ranch that you just mentioned as well. So that's in progress. The Pine Knolls tank replacement project is moving along. They've got the interior of the first tank practically painted. I think there's a nice picture of that in Brian's report. I won't go into a lot of details. They're supposed to start painting the outside of it today, but with the rains, it's obviously been delayed, so that'll probably occur next week, weather permitting. We're still looking at putting that tank into service towards tail end of March, hopefully. So that's moving along. The desalination project, as you've probably heard, is we had our hearing on February 14th last week in San Diego. It got continued by the commission, so we're going to have to regroup, and commission members didn't agree with that. There was another issue related to a local coastal plan provision as far as where the monitoring wells could be located in relation to the bluff and high tide, so we're working on that as well. I think these can all be addressed and clarified to the commission. So that's my thinking at the moment, is just to get that squared away and reapproach them with that information. What that means in summary is that we can't do the testing now until after the snowy plover nesting season is done, which is roughly mid-September of this year. Moving on to the Rodeo Grounds pump station replacement and Stewart Street tank enhancement project, RBF is working behind the scenes on that. They have completed some hydraulic modeling and various alternatives and are putting that into a preliminary design report. So we hope to have an administrative draft to look at during the month of March and then present a formal summary to you during your April board meeting. So with that, that concludes my report, unless there are some questions.
I have a question. Bob, when the Stewart Street tank preliminary design is presented to the board, will that be in sufficient detail that the board can select from a range of options and then launch into an environmental document for that project?
I believe so, although I haven't seen the administrative draft. I think you'll see two or three alternatives, and then we can discuss them and see which way we want to go from there.
Great.
I'm wondering if those of you who attended the Coastal Commission meeting feel sanguine that if Bob can figure out something about where the structure is placed and the snowy plovers, is this going to do it, or is there some hidden agenda, or is there something else that we should be thinking about or doing? Anybody?
Do you want me to respond to that?
Whoever.
I'm not sure
who
you're pointing the question to, but yeah. To me, I think it's getting the facts out there in clear, concise fashion to the commissioners so they know exactly what we're proposing. I'm not even convinced it's a structure, so that's a question that still remains. But there were some fairly exaggerated statements made by people who were not close to the project that made it sound like things are being developed that were not being developed.
Anxious to help us. I mean, that was a good experience.
Well, that was good.
Yeah, which is good. I sensed, as Bob said, that several claims were made which were really pretty extravagant about what we're about to do. And that threw the commission because they started to believe some of the extravagant claims. First it was that we were going to plunk a building on the beach. That seemed to be the big one. And, you know, from there it went downhill because they were ready to believe anything that wasn't true. That's all I'll say.
Well, quite frankly, I'm outraged. I was out of the country, actually out of the state. And when I heard this, and this is ongoing. It's been ongoing since 1996 when I was first elected on this board. There is a cabal of locals, some of them, in fact, most of them practically, are residents in this community, and there are others that are in the county. They have it's an irrational, completely unsubstantiated, but it's been going on since 1996. Ever since we started trying to find an opportunity, with this district has had a consistent history of following up on every single option other than the desal. We've looked at piping water, pumping water out of Nacimiento. I mean, I don't need to go into this. This is history. But it's just outrageous that there are residents of this county, and particularly the ones in this community, that are continually frustrating the majority of the community. We've had numerous opportunities for the public to involve themselves in support of this or debate about this, and this cabal of Luddites are continuing to keep this thing going. I'd like to live long enough to see this project, but I don't think I'm going to make it.
Well, I suppose I can share my two cents worth. I think maybe stating the obvious, and I think there was some confusion on the part of the commissioners about what the ultimate project would look like. So we do have some work to do. But a continuance is something that is just part of the process that projects like this go through at the commission. Oftentimes, in fact, more often than not, a project of this magnitude will be presented to the commission. There will be unanswered questions. The consideration of the project is continued so that those questions can be responded to. So it's a bump in the road, but it's not the death knell of the project.
That sounds very conciliatory, but on the other hand, every time we get one of these, the cost escalates more and more. And that if we were to add up how much more this whole water solution has cost because of the delay over these last few years, it would be horrendous.
Well, unfortunately, cost does not factor into their consideration, but the Pine Knolls water tank project, I think we suffered through two continuances, if my memory serves me right. So it's just a part of what you have to deal with when you have a project that is before the Coastal Commission. And it does cost more money, and I think it's it very much cuts a grain, it cuts across the grain of good planning and good public policy when small districts like ours are put through the meat grinder. But it is what it is, and we just have to persevere.
And on behalf of staff, we are up for this challenge and obviously doing it as cost-effectively as possible and performing whatever tasks are necessary behind the scenes and working through our consultants. And as one last and final comment, that does include that we proceed in a legal way, that we are, what we are doing has been, you know, we have a full-time district council and it is legal, and we want to make sure that the public is aware of that. Certainly, if anyone out there has any questions, they can phone me at 927-6223, or they can talk to Bob Gressens, our district engineer, or certainly if it's a legal issue or question, speak to our district council, Art Montandon, at the same phone number.
If I can just add to that, I haven't seen the full text of the letter that appears in today's Cambrian, but apparently there is an allegation that somehow the project is, quote, illegal. I think even remotely illegal. I think the charge is absolutely laughable.
If I could add 2 points, too, I think on a positive note, I think the coastal staff was actually working with us on this, trying to figure out how do we address these issues and guide the permitting along in a positive fashion. So I thought that was good as part of the experience, as painful as it seemed at the time. The other point, so it seems like we just need to get our oars going at the same time. Some of the people that spoke up against the project were pro-environment, but I think this project can be a pro-environmental project. And getting that point home to people is going to be part of a outreach effort that we have to do more work on, I think, in
the
future.
Hey, Bob, listen. There's no way that anyone who spoke before the Coastal Commission San Diego is more pro-environment than anyone on this board. And I get off of that. That's just not true. This whole project is a pro-environment project. There's no way anyone on this board would support it were it otherwise. So I don't want to even to imply that they are somehow more pro-environment than we are. Totally untrue. Got it?
Well, I didn't want to imply that. I just want to say what was frustrating in part is that I see this as a pro-environmental project, and yet the opposition that was presented at that committee or that hearing doesn't understand that. So it's just getting that information out there and you know, making sure we're addressing all these issues in the project so that is understood, and that was not understood at that hearing.
We're choosing not to understand it. But.
Yeah.
If I can just add one more thing, maybe at the risk of speaking too much, but I'll say it anyway. this is not a simple project. This is a very complex project. It's complex from a geotechnical point of view. It's complex from just a standard engineering point of view. It has many moving parts, and it's difficult to explain in a few sound bites what this project is all about. It takes a lot of the Coastal Commission understands what this project is all about, and I'm very confident that we can do that.
I'd like to just add that I find it very frustrating because you can spell that out with, you know, and provide the facts and everything else, but I think we're dealing with people with emotional, from an emotional platform, and they're like Eric Hoffer's true believers. You know, don't bother me with facts. My mind's made up, so it's hopeless for them. But it's, I think the general public are supportive of it, and they should rise up. And any time they are in a conversation with some of these people that are putting out this misinformation and fantasies, that the general public in this community are at risk, and they need to defend themselves. Need to be informed so they understand exactly what the process is. And I have confidence that the vast majority of the people, and in fact, we've had it. We've seen the support. It's just a hardcore fanatics that are going after it because of whatever their rationale is, irrationality.
We must be tolerant of the people who disagree with our positions. Let's move on to the utilities manager. Speaking of tolerance,
I don't know what you mean by that, but I'm hoping it's
I was hoping you could shed some light on it.
Anyway, I got some good news. Wells are all full, and we're pretty happy about that. San Simeon's full. The data that we're using, I'll just go to the next one. This photo was taken about a week ago, and just happened the MetLife balloon went by in a blimp, so I thought that was kind of neat. Right there at Spooks at Santa Rosa. This is Santa Rosa Creek on Tuesday, and you can see the water going to the ocean quite a bit. And it was a beautiful day then, and it's going to be beautiful today as well. And San Simeon, same scenario, lagoons lower. Looks like we're gonna be okay, even though we've only had about 7.5 inches of rain so far this year. And as you can see from the rainfall chart, we're over 20 feet. That's the black line, and it's about slightly above normal. And this was taken on the 16th, so it's probably higher than that now. And that's on the San Simeon. And this is over a period of the last 6 years. And you can see that we're up there on the end of the black line with the white diamonds, and we're right in there where we should be at this time of year, which is full, and that's a good thing. And Santa Rosa, the same thing. You can see that SR4, the black line on the top, we're just about as high as you can get, and so it's full as well. I'll get back to this, and I'll just go over it right now. This is the inside of the first tank. This photo was actually taken today. They completed the paint, and they're actually doing the spark test on it today. And the spark test is where they run a high-voltage sponge over the tank to see if a current will spark through any pinholes in it. If they see a pinhole, they put a chalk mark around it, and they come back and paint that spot and seal it off. And that part of the tank will be done. The whole inside will be done, except for the bottom. And this is the ladder going up the top, another picture in there. Beautiful job of painting. That we're going to try to do the outside next week. They should be able to sandblast it and complete it next week if the weather holds out. If not, they'll probably move back in inside and do the floor, because they can do the floor anytime because they've heated it. They were using a dehumidifier in there that was extremely noisy at the first part of the project, and that dehumidifier had to run 24/7, and that just wasn't going to work out. I mean, the decibels were extremely loud, and we got them to bring in some diesel heaters because they still have to run 24/7, and they're nice and quiet, and really kept the sound down in the evening. And
hey, Brian, hold on. Yeah. What's that cutout portion over there?
Oh, that's an access hole through the side. That's daylight. That's how you get in and out of the tank when it's dewatered to do maintenance on it.
I'm talking about the bottom right hand.
That's it. That's an access port. It actually has a door on it that swings on the inside, and water pressure keeps it sealed.
I'm telling you, I loved your pictures. I mean, that is a great picture.
It's really pretty inside that tank. That picture doesn't do it justice. I'll just move on to the next one here. And we're far below, so hopefully we'll get some more. Okay, I'll just go on with a few things that are in my report. I'll just point out that Santa Rosa has been taken out of service, and that's one of our goals, is to keep Santa Rosa running all the time with as much water as possible, especially for the steelhead and the habitat in that creek. San Simeon, on the other hand, goes dry all the time, and you know, we can let it go dry earlier than Santa Rosa. But Santa Rosa is a beautiful creek, and we've been keeping it running since SR4, the well at the high school, has been drilled. And it's that's our main goal, and that's why we want to do that. We're also, by doing that, we run that well about 14 hours a day when we run it, and it takes some overtime for people to go out and shut it down. So we're saving on overtime as well. Also report that on February 13th, in front of Rod and Reel Trailer Court, a worker for Sousa Construction knocked over a fire hydrant, and it only took about 6 minutes to close the valve, but we lost about 20,000 gallons in 6 minutes. That's quite a bit of water coming out. But these things happen during construction every once in a while. It's hard to keep your eyes looking at everything. But staff took care of that really quick. On February 14th, we were in Washington, D.C. with Director Villeneuve and our lobby liaison, Jerry Haliva, and we met with one congresswoman and two congressmen, Lois Capps, Sam Farr, who was an Appropriations Committee member, and Dave Hobson, former chairman and current ranking member of the Energy and Water Subcommittee of Appropriations in Washington, D.C. And these people, Lois Capps is the one who helped us get the money for the desal, and the people on the Appropriations Committees are the ones that can keep it going and help us get that money. They all express that they're still going to help us out and do all that they can for us. They also express that with the new Congress stuff, it's hard to say how anything's going to shake out for sure. So there's no promises, no guarantees, but they're still on our side. And we also discussed the WERDA bill, and that's the Water Resource Development Act, and that's been dragging along for a long time, and to get it approved, and hopefully it'll be approved in March, but there's no guarantees on that either. Everything's been dragging along in there. On the SCADA, most all the equipment's at CyberNet now, and they're installing the SOLV training, and that will be up and running, and that software will be online, and we'll be able to store all of our data, everything that we do, and some of our past data, and be able to retrieve it very easily compared to like rummaging through boxes and trying to find out even where we put the boxes. So this is going to be, I think, a great boon for the district, and anybody that seeks information from the district, it'll be quite easy for us to dish up that information, as opposed to now when somebody wants information, sometimes it's quite difficult to retrieve it or even find it and remember where it was put, for that matter. But now it'll all be digitized, and we'll be able to find it. And with that, I'm open to questions.
Question, Mr. President. Brian, can you, or maybe Bob Dressens, give us a thumbnail sketch on the construction schedule for the rest of the Pine Knolls project?
Sure, I can do that. Essentially, once the painting work is done, there'll be some testing done on the it'll be disinfected on the inside of the tank, the first tank. That could take up to a month, depending on, you know, the different analysis that have to be done and whether they have to re-disinfect it and so forth. If they have, for example, volatile organics from the paint in there, they have to drain the whole tank, re-disinfect it, and so forth. So I've been on other projects where that could drag out for 4 to 6 weeks. Hopefully we'll get that done within a few weeks' time on this project. Once that tank has been tested out, they'll hook up the piping to it and put it in the service. So that we expect to happen towards the end of March, barring any more rain delays and so forth. Then they will demolish the two existing tanks. That should be done within a few weeks' time. Reconstruct the rest of the foundation. Only part of the foundation is in place for the second tank, and then start erecting the second tank. I expect the second tank to be probably fully erected by middle of summer, and then that'll follow with some painting work. We're looking at likely a late August date to get that second tank completed.
And the volume of the new tank is greater than the volume of the two existing tanks, isn't that right?
That's right. That's about a 463,000 gallon tank, and the two existing tanks together are a little under, or about 200,000 gallons. So it's right. It's over twice as
constant at the Pierce Fire Apparatus Factory, checking up on our new engine. Included in your packets are the emergency response information for the period from January 1st through February 11th. And I have identified progress updates and highlights in different areas of our fire department operation. In prevention and education, we conducted or completed 11 residential new and remodel fire plan reviews for the month. 21 residential and commercial fire and life safety inspections were conducted. 8 residential and commercial water appliance conservation inspections were conducted. 13 engine company commercial fire inspections were completed. 1 commercial building fire flow test was done, and that was at the for the fire flow for the LENS project. We have 2 fire investigations that are still open and ongoing from 2006. There is an item on today's agenda that deals with the Fire Hazard Fuel Reduction Defensible Space Program, and this is basically a housekeeping issue that we would like to see approved on the agenda for our Defensible Space Program. This is not a new item. This has to do with the defensible space in and around Cambria, which is currently known by the moniker Fire Hazard Fuel Reduction Program. This is basically a housekeeping issue that will eliminate the need to read this in and approve it every year as a method of procedure with the California Health and Safety Code. And we're asking that this become a local ordinance to avoid the confusion and the work of having to go through that every year. Basically, in theory, the plan has not changed, and the method of that we would handle the defensible space is relatively the same. In operations, the department has just completed a new an academy with for reserve paid call firefighters, and we brought 5 new reservists into the fold, and they are Tyson Hamilton. I mean, it's a very labor-intensive effort, and they did a great job with that. The North Coast Ocean Rescue just recently completed a training session last week that focused on nighttime ocean and marine rescue operations. The training was directed at standardizing night ocean launch and retrieval methods, including lighting, navigational marking, communications, search techniques, and utilizing our thermal imaging. Light amplification, night vision, and other equipment detected, directed at improving and locating lost vessels and people in dark or low-light conditions. I guess that was a real informative session that they had. They've got a member on the team that has a lot of expertise in the area, and they had a real productive session. Members of the Cambria Community Services Fire Department attended a wildland fire equipment vendors fair yesterday. The intent of that is to bring all of the fire departments out to try out a lot of the wildland firefighting equipment and then to vote on their personal and departmental favorite vendors that supply that type of equipment. And this is all directed at our wildland fire grant that we received. The equipment that received the most votes from the people that tried it out yesterday will become the specification for the county grant, and that's the equipment that will be purchased. This is the grant that was hosted by the Santa Margarita Fire Protection District on behalf of itself and 11 other of the San Luis Obispo County fire agencies. Captain Mike Gallagher was instrumental in helping to write that grant, and that will provide us with a lot of new fire equipment to the tune of about $37,000 worth of much-needed fire equipment. As I mentioned earlier, Chief Putney and Engineer Ryan Maloney are in Appleton, Wisconsin at the Pierce Manufacturing Plant. They're going through the final inspection of our new Pierce fire engine that we should be receiving here soon. The engine should be delivered to the Golden State Pierce dealership in Modesto the first week in March. And when it arrives there, it'll have another inspection to make sure that it arrived in one piece, about another 2 months for us to outfit it and to train everyone on the function, to get everybody up to speed in it on the new engine, and then it should be ready for service around the first or second week of May. So we're really looking forward to that. That should be a good addition to our department. And the last thing I have on my report is that the 2007 Amgen tour is going to be arriving here very soon. Probably I'm expecting it to be here in about a half an hour. This is the stage four of the Amgen tour. As you're aware, it started at Seaside this morning, and I don't know how the weather was up there this morning when they started, but it was raining cats and dogs here early. So thankfully, it looks like the weather's clearing up, and it should be a nice afternoon for them. But this leg ends in San Luis Obispo. They are expected to be riding through here right around 2:15, depending on how the weather either slowed them down or sped them up. I don't know how to read that. I guess if you're soaking wet, you might want to ride faster. I don't know. But we're expecting them anywhere between 2 o'clock and 2:30. And in order to avoid any kind of delays in response, because the highway will be closed, we can respond across if we need to, but there would be a delay incurred in doing that. We've brought in a few extra crews, and we have them positioned strategically throughout the community to provide a good response to the community. And that is at our cost. We've researched ways to recover that funding, and at this time we haven't come up with anything. I guess the tour does not recognize any kind of local money reimbursement to communities for being out. So,
well, that's very thoughtful of them, isn't it?
Yeah.
You don't mind if we miss them this afternoon, do you?
The Cambria just happens to be the only community that doesn't have a way to get across the highway, you know, out of all of the, I guess everything from San Simeon south of here, you know, Cayucas and everywhere, they can get underneath the highway. We can't do that, so we're impacted a little heavier than the other communities are.
Did we ask them for direct help and
–
Yes, thank you. As you can tell, this is a very brief report because you'll be hearing from me much more later on this afternoon. And specifically, I didn't really include any details on the budget since we'll be discussing the mid-year budget review later today. As far as major cash disbursements, and I'm using $100,000 to quantify that amount, there were none since the last report. Reserve balance was, as of January 31st, 2007, was $8,327,000, which is a net increase of approximately $300,000 from the prior month. And I'll be just discussing the reserves further in the mid-year review. So I trust the brevity of the report is all right in the context of we'll be discussing it later.
Thank you. Are there any committee reports? Hearing none, we'll move on to the consent agenda. And I ask that item 6A be pulled. And the reason is because I had some questions over some of the expenditures, and I was hoping staff can shed light. First is the $1,320 check. Page 9 is the $1,320 check to the Friends of the Fiscalini for what's described as administrative cell tower pass-through T-Mobile check date 1219. Can you just tell me what that is if anybody knows?
They receive the monthly stipend that we have a contract with T-Mobile or Singular. It's traded hands a couple of times. And the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve receive that money on a monthly basis. It passes through the district and goes to the Friends by agreement.
By agreement between whom?
With the T-Mobile agreement. It actually originated with Singular in the district.
There is a separate memorandum of understanding between the district and the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch where they receive the proceeds for rent for that site.
And will you authorize that?
Yes.
Okay.
They manage the project and work with us, us as the ranch manager and the property owner, and they're the ones who are coordinating the project construction.
So we're just a vehicle for this money. This money comes from T-Mobile on late payments. Tell me about that, Tammy.
You know, anytime you get a new staff manager, particularly in the finance department, who's going to be looking at all nooks and crannies, you can figure out that we're going to find things that fall through the cracks with regard to staff. We had, unfortunately, during this time period, a staff member leave us, terminated. They resigned. And so in the interim, even though we do our very best to pick up and do, we did not recognize that this person did not submit these taxes and these payments in a timely fashion. So we get the notice, and Alan and our finance staff were pretty prompt about getting them paid as soon as we received that notice.
What steps can we take in the future to avoid paying what I think is a significant hit?
We have administrative policies that have deadlines and guidelines with regard to all our taxes that we are to pay, and I hold the department head accountable. So Alan is aware of that and discovering this, as was Patrick when he was the finance manager here. And so I can commit to you that since this has been discovered, I'm certain that they've put in stronger placeholders so that this does not happen again. We've actually found a couple of other things that we have been better at administering, not that we've incurred any fees or penalties. And I appreciate Alan coming in and making some changes so that they are proactive and positive on behalf of the district.
Thank you. And then on page 12, I noticed there are three checks in the month of January to Sergeant Major and Associates. And why are there three checks? I thought it's...
Because his contract just got extended last month, so I hold those invoices until I get your approval to pay. So one of them was for January. One was January for state, and then one of them was for federal. Well, it does identify him, two of them as federal. I think that's a typo. Two of them were state, and one of them was federal. And I held them until the board approved the extension of his contract.
So you mean one foot was for a different month?
Yes. It does identify it as federal. Alan, unless you can clear it up, it says federal January. I'm making an assumption because I know that I approve those since they come out of the administration division, and I'm believing that they were they're billed in advance. So one was January, one was February, or one was December, one was December, one was January. Oh, because...
I had a question under regular business item 8C, but I asked Peter and Greg if they had any, if they don't have any problem with it, then I...
I think it accurately reflects the action that was taken.
Okay. All right. Well, that's... Thank you.
You bet.
Okay. Tammy, do you want...
Sure. The consent agenda, item 6A, is to approve the expenditures for the month of January 2007. 6B is to approve the minutes of the Board of Directors meetings for January 25th, 2007 and February 12th, 2007. That was a special meeting, by the way. And then item 6C is to present certification by the San Luis Obispo County Clerk of November 7th, 2006 election results.
I move approval of the consent calendar as read.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor, please state aye.
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 Motion carries unanimously. Let's move on to agenda item 7A.
7A, and Assistant Chief Miller just stepped out of the room, so I will start the discussion on this. This is to introduce Ordinance 1-2007, adding Section 6 to Title 6 of the Cambria Community Services District Code, creating a defensible space ordinance. Today, we're asking that you receive the staff report. We introduce the ordinance at this meeting and have a public hearing and consider community input. And then it will come up in March at the March 22nd board meeting with adoption to become part of the code. As Mark brought up earlier within the fire chief's report, what we are trying to do is simplify the process that we have ongoing each year that all lot and property owners provide for defensible space around their property. It's quite cumbersome in the fact that we have to come through these notice processes. We have a lot of staff time that's designated to it when it can be, in a sense, established as a policy and adopted and become part of our code. So I know Art may have some comments with regard to the ordinance. The draft ordinance is attached. Just for the public's information in the background, there are some fiscal savings with regard to this proposal, and that will be that it reduces the total cost of the district to advertise and produce and comply with the health and safety code procedures to declare vegetation a public nuisance within Cambria. And then also we anticipate a lot of fire department administration staff time efficiencies, so there's some monetary value there as well. The second impact is and other requirements that are very explicit and rigid. In recent years, this fire department program has been named the Fire Hazard Fuel Reduction Program, which many of us have a hard time remembering, okay, because we're used to calling it weed abatement. So what's going to happen today as a result of this action, should you decide to move forward with it, is that it will become the Defensible Space Ordinance. So for all of those listening and folks in the audience and staff, we're not creating a new program. We're simply renaming it and simplifying the process by codifying it. The current process that we utilize is not efficient and requires specific posting, advertising in local newspapers, public hearings, and other specific steps which make it, the process costly, cumbersome, and extremely labor-intensive. This new defensible space ordinance would create an annual vegetation removal program, which would replace our current fire hazard fuel reduction program. The ordinance would be added to our district code as into Title 6 and create Section 6. It would mimic the previous fire hazard fuel reduction program, and it would be within our code, so there would be no need for multiple annual board meetings to include the declaration steps and the public hearings to remove annual vegetation, and this would therefore streamline all the efforts that we've made to date. The other and most significant impact that this new ordinance would have is that all parcels and lots within CCSD jurisdiction would be required to clear their parcels of annual vegetation and debris. This is a significant task for the CCSD Fire Department and its staff, and one that we don't take lightly. The task is clearly necessary if we are to truly offer the public safety and protection to our current residents and visitors that are essential for the preservation of life, our environment, and the property. Cambria has long been identified as a community at significant wildland fire risk. The Governor's Blue Ribbon Fire Commission delivered a report to the Governor after the catastrophic 2003 wildland season, identifying that local agencies must move forward toward reducing the wildland fuels in their communities or suffer catastrophic and disastrous wildland fires with severe ecological results and the loss of human life and property. It has been predicted and clearly described that it's a matter of when Cambria will suffer a large-scale wildland fire and not if it will occur. Foresters and wildland fuel experts have performed numerous studies in Cambria, including our fuel bed, as well as the actions that our community has taken to reduce the wildland fire threat. They are complementary of these actions and codes that have been enacted. However, they specifically address the fact that the wildland annual fuel clearance must be accomplished through the entire CCSD. This would then reduce the potential of a ground fire gaining significant headway and moving into the treetops, becoming a crown fire, which is unstoppable except by Mother Nature. This new defensible space program will target the invasive species. Other larger parcels throughout our community currently have such fire and fuel management plans. With the adoption of this proposed defensible space code, the CCSD will join other large and small communities which have adopted similar codes or ordinances to combat and prevent wildfires. And then I would defer to Art for any questions with regard to the ordinance and its presentation.
Yes, you have before you an ordinance for your consideration for introduction, so we'll come back, as Tammy said, at your next board meeting. What I have not done in this format is to redraft this with the code sections within which it will eventually be placed in our codified ordinances. And just I wanted to at least highlight that for your information, so when you look at this next month, if you see it in a different format, it's because of that. The text will not change, so it's appropriate to introduce and consider at the next meeting.
A question, Mr. President. If the board wanted to add or delete or change any of the provisions of the ordinance, can they be done between now and the next time it's on the agenda, or do we have to start all over again?
If it's done after this meeting, then the ordinance would then again have to be reintroduced and then adopted a next meeting after that.
Joan, you had a question?
My question is, I guess if you have an ordinance that has to be policed or followed up, and how will that be different now if it's our ordinance? And does it need more staff? Or, for instance, it talks about having no more than 2 inches of leaves dropped, whatever. Who's going to check that, or how do we watch over this?
Well, obviously, the chief and I spoke about this before he went out of town. It would require some public education. And notice, you know, initially that we're changing the process with regard to how you're noticed, because everybody now gets a card in the mail, and that won't happen anymore. This year, obviously, with the passing, should you decide to adopt it, we would want to do at least some sort of notice saying, hey, the process changed. Here's what it looks like now. Now it's going to be an annual requirement, and there will be no noticing. So as far as extending ourselves out to the public, I think it's important in the beginning that we do that so that people are knowledgeable about it. And the fire department will continue in their role in managing this program, so I would probably rely on them and hold them accountable for ensuring that it is followed and complied with.
So if someone...
communication with the property owners when it's getting nearer the time that the deadline's approaching.
Okay, and the other question is, if we were to pass it, for example, will it be early enough for it to be in place for this year, or...
That's exactly why we're doing it now. We do have some time constraints with regard to the county tax rolls, and so we're starting earlier this year so that we can attempt to get this thing rolling and get the notices out and the education to the public so they're aware of the changes.
And I guess the other question is, if there's property, for example, county property, are they equally obliged to perform?
Indeed, they are.
Okay.
As are we.
Yeah, right. I think it's a very sensible... based on knowing the work that the fire department had to do on each individual lot, it makes sense.
I agree with you, Peter, in some respects, and disagree with you in its implication. And let me explain. I like the idea of an ordinance because of the fiscal reasons stated. However, I'm deeply troubled and extraordinarily concerned by the fine, by the adoption language that begins in section 2, 1 through 5K. We have a forest management plan. I don't know if the forest management plan was utilized. This is a resource. There are, for citizens who live in this forest, we don't want to live in a parking lot, and I recognize a parking lot is the safest fire environment around, probably one of the safest. But we need to balance the right, so to speak, of the forest and also the people who have elected, like us, to live in a forest. And I'm not about to give the fire department carte blanche to interpret what the words, for example, in 5B, where it says brush, ornamental vegetation, native and non-native species that look like brush, is to be cut and thinned to reduce. Who's going to determine what is thinning is and how much thinning is it? Is it going to be Chief Putney? I like Chief Putney, but he's a fireman, and I don't want a fireman telling me, because his focus, rightly as it should be, from a fire perspective, but he's not looking at it from a citizen's perspective. Oh, from
fires.
Correct.
At some point, I think the board is going to have back on its agenda the forest management plan and perhaps consideration of official adoption of it. I think this ordinance can be fixed rather easily by simply adding a provision that all of this work has to be carried out in conjunction with board policies, so that the board has an opportunity to adopt policies with respect to the issues that you raised, and then the ordinance has to be enforced in a manner that is consistent with those policies.
Okay. That's one approach. I just want to point out two other areas. There's others, but I'll next down in 5, there's discussion about poison oak and poison sumac, and it says they should be, again, thinned or removed. I don't know why you'd want to thin poison sumac or poison oak. I don't know anyone who likes that stuff. And I'm not sure if it helps anybody other than the poison oak and poison sumac community. You know, I'm sure they're fine, but I don't represent them. Yeah, but rattlesnakes are good because they take care of other, you know, animals that sometimes get in the way of our lifestyle. Standing dead trees is a real problem. This was discussed when we talked. I'm on the forest, Cambria Forest Committee, and when we talked about the forest management plan, we spent quite a bit of time talking about the importance of standing dead trees. They might be unsightly, but they are integral to a sustaining forest, which is why at the end of that paragraph, it recognizes that, and it says that, well, we'll allow a dead tree per quarter acre increment. Well, who picked that quarter acre increment? So if we just simply add the language of that Greg is suggesting, consistent with previous board policies, you know, it's just going to create these kind of numbers don't really mean anything unless you can justify them somehow.
And adopts it at the next meeting, then there's a 30-day referendum period after that before it goes into effect. So from today forward, we're talking 90 days out for its effective date. If the board chose to appoint a committee today of two of its members to work on this for the next 30 days, and if we brought it back at the next meeting as an urgency ordinance, it would require a four-fifths vote, but it could be in place in 60 days with that process. And then maybe we can get some answers because Chief Putney would be back and we could look at alternative language in the same time
frame. What's the urgency?
I think they want it in place to be able to enforce it during the next fire abatement, I mean the weed abatement season.
Well, I recognize that's a desire, but what's the urgency?
I'm not from the fire department, so I can't answer that, but that's the expressed urgency, is to meet the next season.
We've been doing this for 20 years, and all of a sudden, it's an urgent thing. The problem with an urgent thing is we don't look at things carefully, and for something like this, I mean, I support the ordinance totally, but we shouldn't just create this, quote, urgency at the cost of drafting a good ordinance.
Well, if the committee comes back in 30 days with the recommendation that it needs more time to work on, that could also be one of the options.
Let's try that. Just get a committee of a board members. You're talking about a committee of board members.
I only suggest that because before when we had issues on the fire code and residential sprinkling, that's the process that was taken. Doesn't have to. You can direct it back to staff also. But
that did work well in that instance, sprinklers.
Mr. President, I think urgency could well be necessary if the rainfall is as low as it's currently occurring, then we will be into a really dry summer, which is an urgent situation. You know.
Right, but the issue is all we have to do is we continue with the same practice we've been doing for 20 years. I recognize it's going to cost us a little bit more, but we don't have any numbers as how much it's going to cost. How much do we save? Is it as much as we pay for that lobbyist? Who my feelings about that, but. I mean, how much are we going to lose if we continue the same practice we've been doing for 20 years, even if we do have a drought?
Well, you know? I think the point is it's applying to all lot owners, not just the ones that the fire department have indicated previously, which are in extremely far dangerous areas.
The policies that the board has put in place, and probably were so before those policies were ever adopted. The real problem comes in when we hire people to go out and clear vacant lots, and they have no regard for what they're removing. They don't understand, in most cases, that some of the plant material actually retards fire. And that's where the real problem is, as I see it. So I really don't see any problem going ahead with this ordinance today if we just have a provision in it that allows the board to periodically make the policy with respect to how all of this work is supposed to be carried out.
Where would you put that?
You know, if we gave our district council 15 minutes, he could probably come back to us with some language later in the meeting.
Well, I disagree. I just think that either Joan's suggestion that we ought to have a committee and come back in 30 days, almost every paragraph may or may not conflict with the Cambria Forest Management Plan. I know Jay does. B and D might, however you want to define thin and cutting and so forth. Cutting the tree limbs also, I know there's a specific forest management plan language as to that, and I don't know if it was consulted. Again, it's too bad Chief Putney's not here because he's the president of the Forest Committee. He's very knowledgeable about this.
Well, I, as one director, don't have any problem with doing that as long as we're prepared to entertain a motion to adopt this as an urgency ordinance when it comes back. I think it ought to be in place before the fire season is upon us.
Well, if we put this over to next month, we can still do it within this year if we decide to pass it next month?
If it's brought back next month in the format of an urgency ordinance, if that's the board direction, then as I stated before, it would require four of you to vote for it to pass, and it would be in effect immediately at that point. It would actually be in effect 30 days earlier. But for whatever reason, if it only garnered three votes, it would then be placed on the next board agenda for adoption and then would be in effect 30 days later than if it was introduced today.
Well, let's assume the worst case scenario.
In advance of the effective date, just to make them operative so they'd have to comply by the effective date. We have to submit, I believe, the roll to the county assessor by August 10th. Am I around August 10th?
August 10th?
Yeah, the 1st of August, somewhere around there. They modified every year a little bit.
Wouldn't that give us enough time?
Well, we'd have to send out the notices, give them the statutory time, come back to the board to confirm the role. There's a process with that also.
And what happens is when we go out and inspect that, you know, June 10th, then we send out our contractor, clears, bills, and then we have to send it to the, you know, we have to have an amount prepared to send to the tax assessor, and that's a compressed time frame from, you know, the middle of June to August 1st.
Well, I think the whole board is for the ordinance. The only grumbling is with the meat of the parameters of the language.
Mr. President, if it helps, in terms of adopting this ordinance as an urgency ordinance, which requires a 4/5 vote, perhaps you can see your way to understand that there's an urgency such that we don't follow the same program that we followed in the past. If we don't have this ordinance in place in time, then what we're going to have for the coming fire season is just a repeat of what we've had for the past many years. We're going to have contractors out there doing their thing without regard to plant material that should be salvaged and so forth.
But how is this ordinance going to prevent that?
Because it's an opportunity for us to codify the requirements for clearing the defensible space. It becomes a law, and the fire department is charged with the responsibility and the obligation of enforcing that law. We're taking a policy and we're reducing it to an ordinance. And so if you want to put teeth into some of the provisions of the forest management plan that have to do with the way defensible space is cleared, this is the opportunity to do it. It becomes a law. It's enforceable.
But as a director, how do you know whether all this language here is consistent with the forest management plan?
Well, that's what you're suggesting. You're suggesting what?
And while he's walking up, I just want to make sure that in the adoption section, which is number 4, and for the public's information, the beginning in the year of this ordinance is adopted, notices will continue to be sent to existing property owners who own or maintain properties within the CCSD. This is going to continue, or we're proposing, for an additional 2 years, and then no further general notices will be sent out except for changes of parcel or lot ownership as a courtesy. And the notice will state that all parcels located within the CCSD must be cleared of vegetation as described in this ordinance and give the date for required compliance. So we are giving a heads up, and then we'll end it in a couple of years like we try to do with other programs.
Mr. Ryburn.
Good afternoon. My name is Wayne Ryburn. I've lived here 26 years. I'm one of the advocates with Chief Putney for this ordinance. We talked about this when he first came to work here. To clear the air a little bit, if you walk around Cambria or drive around with your eyes open, you'll notice that some of these lots are cleared meticulously. Others have never been cleared since I've lived here. The purpose of this whole thing, in my mind, is get rid of the business as usual. For one reason or another, the property owners who were not clearing these lots historically were never leaned on, if you want to use that word, to do that. Now, I don't know why that didn't happen. Maybe it was lack of manpower, resources, whatever. But the purpose of this, it's a level playing field. Everybody is supposed to clear their lot. Everybody. And if they don't do it, they get billed. It's in the ordinance. It's real clear. It's going to save you guys money and resources. In regard to your comments, common sense. You have to apply common sense to some of these issues, like I don't mind poison oak in my yard. It keeps the tourists out. It keeps the dogs out. I live right next to the ranch. The ranch is my backyard. So I weed eat it. I keep it down. I don't arrest.
Those tourists don't know what poison oak looks like.
That's true. Okay, I'll give you that. The other thing is trees. Dead trees fall. And it's a question of what direction are they going to fall in. They're also fuel for a fire. So in my mind, when a tree dies, whether it's on an open lot, a developed lot, it comes out. It's real simple. And it's not business as usual. So I would really hope you don't lose the momentum on this for another fire season. We could talk that forever about being Oakland and all the danger we have. The other thing is, if the insurance companies ever get wind of our fire danger that we have in Cambria, you're going to see these rates go up. So this is another incentive to clean it up.
Having this coming back as an urgency matter, I think we've got a clear path to getting this adopted before the fire season is upon us, with plenty of time to get the notices out and comply with all of the requirements of the ordinance. So if the public hearing is closed, I move that we refer this to a committee of the board to be appointed by the president to work with the staff to consider those aspects of the forest management plan having to do with fuel reduction and clearance of defensible space, and to report back with a revised ordinance at the next board meeting.
I think Chief Putney ought to be a member, because he's the head of the there's probably no one else. Is Ben Bolden here?
I'll second that just to get it on the discussion. He was here.
Does anybody on the board want to be a member? Because I don't think we need two. I think if we have Chief Putney and or Ben Bolden or Pat Bolden, she's also quite knowledgeable.
I'm sure they would volunteer to participate.
That's a dirty trick to volunteer people who aren't here.
They volunteered me. I can volunteer them.
I sense, Mr. President, that we may not appoint a board member. And allow staff to refer to.
I trust staff. Do you have any problem?
That's fine with me.
Yeah.
I'm willing to serve on it. It's not my issue, but if you needed a board member, I'd do it.
Do we need a board member?
I don't think we do, but if Joan wants to, it's.
Well, why don't we do this? When we get another draft together, we can share that draft with the board members so they can have it at least where we're going before it gets into a formal agenda packet.
Yeah, basically the only issue is I want to know whether this is consistent or inconsistent with the forest management plan. That's it. Everything else is.
Well, I was on this forest management committee for about 2 years, and so if you want to, I could go review it after they make the changes.
Okay, that's fine. All right, so we're going to table this, or what are we going to do?
Well, there's a motion on the floor that's been seconded.
Okay, and what can you recite the motion again? So, because I'm not clear on it.
The motion is to refer the ordinance as presented to us today to staff to determine.
So that's everybody. Be back, please, at 2:20. We're going to do. We're going to skip item 8A and move to item 8D because of a conflict issue. So, can we please consider item 8D?
Okay, 8D is to adopt resolution 14-2007 authorizing the extension of Kim Lindberry Professional Services Agreement for Project Management Assistant. And Bob Gressens, our district engineer, is going to present this report.
Thank you, Tammy. I'd like to introduce Ms. Lindberry, who's out in the audience today. So, Kim, if you wouldn't mind standing up. Kim has been providing construction inspection services for us since approximately May of 2004. Just to give you an idea, some of the projects that she has worked on, they include the East-West Ranch water main, the SCADA project, and most recently the Pine Knolls water tank replacement project. We have been very pleased with Kim's services and her level of professionalism on the job, and we recommend extending her existing agreement, which was approved by your board originally on May 27th of 2004. So unless otherwise extended, this agreement would run out on June 30th of this year. Also, the total amount approved back in 2004 without additional board authorization was $78,000 at that time. And currently, as of the end of January of this year, we're about at $74,000. So to continue with Kim's services, We're recommending to extend the contract through to June 30th of 2008 and also extend the authorization by an additional $75,000, of which $50,000 would go to the Pine Knolls tank replacement project and $25,000 would go towards the biosolids thickener project, which is at the wastewater treatment plant. With that said, staff recommends that you would adopt Resolution 14-2007, authorize an extension to the Kim R. Linberry May 27, 2004 Consulting Services Agreement to June 30th, 2008, and an additional $75,000 from a neighbor, not necessarily construction activity going on. But during a busy part of the project, she would definitely be there 40 hours a week.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Just so you're saying dividing up 50 and 25, is that about a third, two-thirds of her time will go to the one project and about one-third to the
other? That's correct. You know, that's rough estimating at this point. We came up with close to $50,000 to get through the close of the Pine Knolls project. And then another $25,000 was an estimate to help get the biocells equipment installed at the plant.
I think that's a really a good piece of it to have that, and I assume Brian agrees with that. It seems like that should help them move that along. And it's going to help us the quicker that gets on board. That saves us money. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that this is a really good thing to do.
So. And might I state, too, because I don't know if Bob mentioned, she is a professional engineer, so it's not just that we have this hired project manager. She is a PE as well.
Yeah, right. No,
this, of course, this is our net cost because she doesn't owe, there's no overhead as far as she's concerned. Right.
Yeah. I'll entertain a motion.
I move the recommended action.
I would second it.
All those in favor, please state aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Hearing none against, motion carries unanimously.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim.
Yes. Let's move back to item 8A, which is the audit presentation.
Right. So staff is asking that you, the recommended action is to receive the fiscal year 2005-2006 audit. And it will be presented today by Brad Silva of Moss, Levy, and Hartsheim. This audit cost for this fiscal year was $11,900. And this, again, is for fiscal year end June 30th, 2006. It was attached to your staff report. The third paragraph of the independent auditor's report is the opinion on the financial statements and adequacies of internal controls within the CCSD, and that is that we have it's an unqualified opinion. So with that, I'll turn it over to Alan. I know he has some opening remarks, and then he'll reintroduce Brad Silva.
Thank you. Honorable President and Vice President, members of the board, before introducing the independent auditor's representative, I wanted to make a few general comments in regards to the audit of the CCSD for the fiscal year ended, possibly for the audience. General activities, general fund, that's the general fund and the resource conservation fund. The business type activities or proprietary funds, that's the water and wastewater funds or the enterprise funds. And I just want to touch on a few key points found in the audit. On page 15, the statement of net assets, which is the CCSD as a whole, all funds, it represents the excess of assets over liabilities. It increased for governmental activities, decreased for business type activities, with an overall decrease of $270,000. Cash decreased by $1.3 million during the year. Almost all the decrease was in business type activities. On page 22, the statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balance for governmental type fund. And the excess of revenue over expenditures was roughly $12,000. Last year, it was roughly $95,000. It's still more revenue than expenditures, obviously, where we want to be. The revenues increased approximately $700,000, while the expenditures increased by approximately $800,000 from prior year. About $350,000 of the expenditure increase was in capital outlay. which, of course, represents investment in the future. And then on page 25, the statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in net assets, proprietary funds. The decrease in net assets is $590,000. Last year, that was $699,000, the amount of decrease. And a couple of last items. On the very last page, the last disclosure note titled Deficit Spending, the second paragraph of that was supplied by myself, so if there's any questions or comments on that, they should be directed to myself rather than Mr. Silva. And the auditors, I only just today gave them the draft management discussion and analysis, so they haven't had a chance to review that. It's our input, but the auditors certainly have the right to question any misleading or inaccurate information in that. Of course, I do not believe there is anything inaccurate or misleading, but again, any questions in regards to that should be directed to me because, again, Mr. Silva has not had a chance to see that. And at this time, I'd like to...
Mr. Jackson did. We just have to get the number to zero is where that number comes from. But, so my name is Brad Silva from Moss, Levy & Hartsheim. I was the manager on this audit for the second year. As pointed out, there's unqualified opinion again, which is, in auditing terms, the best you can get. What was presented to us was presented fairly. You have a copy of the audit in front of you, correct? Is it? We go through a page? Okay. So just want to point out a few, it's going to be brief, few key points. On page 18, on the governmental funds, I mean, the governmental funds are healthy. There's $8 million in there in cash. But don't see any problems in the general fund. What's more concerning is on page 23 in the business.
Can I ask you a question at that
sure.
point? In terms of generally accepted accounting practices for local government organizations, what is considered to be a prudent percentage of the annual budget that ought to be allocated to reserves?
There's no actual rule. It's whatever you decide you want. I can do a comparison between when I'm going to talk about the business type to the general, where you have $8 million in your general, you have $1 million in your maybe $2 million in your business type.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see. I mean, your annual budget for the general is about $4.5 million. I mean, that's 2 years you have of reserves in the general fund. And then when you look at the business type, it's about $2 million. That's less than a year of reserves in the business type.
Well, but isn't, there's no isn't rule. There some norm that auditors use? Obviously, I would think if you came in and did an audit and we had no reserves, you'd express a concern about that. What's the tipping point?
Well, we do. I mean, we do stress a concern in there that you are running.
We're running deficits.
Running deficit spending
in two accounts. But take that aside.
Okay.
If you came in and you looked at the district and we had absolutely no cash reserves, I would think you'd have something to say about that when you presented the audit. What's the tipping point? How do you make the determination as to whether or not the reserves are adequate?
If you have 6 months, if you had fun, it just had to borrow more of presentation to get that to zero so it wouldn't show negative cash. But as you can see on page 25, the revenues, and just looking at operating, not looking at interest, and that's about, 1.6 in the water fund of operating, $2 million of expenses. And that's where our concern comes in, that just operations aren't covering the expenses. And I know in this current year, some salaries are being capitalized to certain projects, which did lower the expenses because it's going to be over the life of the project. But our concern is more of a cash flow issue. Whether you call it an expense or a capital, if you look on page 26, you started the year with $2.8 million, and it's down to $1.2 million at the end of the year. So you used another $1.5 million during the current fiscal year, which, I mean, in that direction, that would be, at the end of this year, negative in the enterprise funds. So that's just what's concerning to us, and that's why we pointed out again, and that's good that this study is being done. That is kind of the direction we need to go in. So that's good that, you know, May, that's the day we started. I believe is it finished yet or close to? It's probably wrapping up, but yeah, that's a good start. Because just looking at the financials, I mean, you can see it's going in the wrong direction. But step one is getting a consultant to let you know and having some backup, so it's not, you know, only the district's decision, but you're paying someone to figure that information, present it to you, and then you make the decision based on what you have in front of you.
It's been for several years now that we've been in deficit spending in the water, right? Just water.
Another question. Do you capitalize, are we capitalizing personnel costs associated with the capital improvement projects?
Yes, certain personnel costs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, right. those personnel costs that are attributable to the capital projects that we have ongoing, whether they're in the preliminary stage or the design stage or the construction stage, we're capitalizing those costs?
Yes.
So they're not reflected in the operating budget?
In the expenses, no.
Okay.
In the cash flows, yes. They're still going to get paid. You're still going to... So, and yes, your capital assets did increase quite a bit during the year on page 34.
So it's... I hate to try and whitewash this because that is obviously something that we shouldn't do. But however, you can look at some of these numbers and you can infer that it's not entirely a deficit spending situation, that some of these costs are being incurred because they're necessary in order to further along capital projects. Is that right?
Yes and no. Yes, on the okay. expenses side, that is correct. On a strictly okay. cash flow side, it is. I mean, that's good. You're getting the capital assets. That's not mm-hmm. going to pay the salaries and the bills when they come due. So your capital assets are going up. But when you go from 2.8 to 1.2, I mean, it's great. You're getting a lot of projects and a lot of assets going next year, when employees are going to want to be paid.
But if we weren't paying catch-up on critically needed capital improvements, the picture would be quite a bit better than what is reflected here.
True, yes.
Okay.
That's to do with, you know, rates and having a reserve from the past. But, yeah, it is finally all catching up.
Okay.
That pretty much concludes my report, unless there's any other questions.
I have a question. I'm not sure if it's for you.
Sure, I can.
About the reserves... You show $8 million in the government side.
Yes.
Well, I believe most of that money came from a lawsuit settlement for MTBE, which was, you know, part of the water. I'm just wondering why that money isn't back in the utilities account.
Actually, I believe most of that money is gone. Is that correct? Has that been spent?
Some of it's left, but the majority of the MTBE settlement funds have been spent on the capital projects.
Okay,
but that did go into the water and sewer funds.
Yes, I mean it's designated into the LAIF fund, and I don't know the exact amounts. I'd have to defer to Alan, and he may not have a spreadsheet here to show exactly how it's been broken down. It's spent, but we have that. Yes, Pine Knolls tanks, build out reduction program, yeah. Water Master Plan, EIR, yeah. Crosstown Trail, to name a few.
Thank you.
Another question, sure. Mr. President. This may be more appropriately addressed to Alan, but it gets back to the way we're dealing with...
I'm not sure of the question, so let me restate it and
sure.
Please correct me. If you're asking, by capitalizing the costs, are we creating a larger asset that if we need to go out for financing, be it bonds, however, we have this asset that is now worth more so we can borrow more against it?
Correct.
The value of the asset is the value of the asset. Any loans we're going to get on that would be based on the appraised value. It doesn't matter what we're carrying on the books, the historical cost, what we say it is, any loans, they're going to look at what you have there if it's offered as security. There, it's really not going to be a function of how, what all we say the cost of that is. You know, there, any bank or anything like that is going to say this asset is worth this much. We'll loan X amount based on the valuation.
Well, I understand that, but assuming that there's value in the entitlement, then it's my understanding that the Internal Revenue Service requires that certain expenses be accounted for in a certain way in order to make them eligible for a financing.
Well, the IRS definitely has very strong opinions. You know, it's quite a bit of law about what items must be capitalized. That is mostly in regards to corporation or business, because businesses always like to, they don't like to capitalize things, they like to expense it for tax purposes. So since we're not a tax-paying entity, the IRS is, I won't say they don't care about that, but it's less of an IRS function and more of a proper accounting function, GASB function. And, you know, direct costs associated with a capital project, engineering costs, are the clearest, are perfectly fine, and not only perfectly fine, but it's proper to do so. When you start looking at some general administrative costs, that's a little grayer of an area. One other thing I would like to point out, since the enterprise funds do pay overhead to the general fund, part of that overhead is everyone's in administration's salary or portion thereof, and if things are directly costed out to the projects, then you can't charge overhead for it.
Staff about some changes, maybe like to see, but overall, no, there was no problems with it.
Good. I think the community needs to understand that these expenses we've been incurring for very significant and costly capital improvement projects have been paid for with cash, and oftentimes municipal agencies like ours will finance costs like that with debt, under the theory that there's a useful life for the capital asset and you just pay for it over time, roughly coincidental with the period of the financing, which theoretically would be roughly coincidental with the life of the capital asset. So while we see a lot of outflow of cash, it is because we're paying cash, and we're fortunate to have the reserves that enable us to do that and still sustain the level of service that we provide. But at some point, we'll have the opportunity to replenish those reserves if we choose to do a financing on one or more of these capital assets. And when we get the Black and Veatch study, we may decide that that's the more prudent way to go.
Any other comments from the board? There's a member of the audience who would like to speak on this issue. Thank you, Mr. Silva.
Thank you.
And that's Mr. McGarry, John McGarry.
Good afternoon, Mr. President, Madam, gentlemen. My name is John McGarry, and I live here in town. And I have a question, not so much about the audit, but with regard to the management discussion and analysis. I've taken a quick read of it, and on page 14, the report talks in terms of economic factors that seem to be causing us some shortfall. And the report basically says two significant factors other than general cost increases impact the financial strength of the CCSD. They are minimal impact or development fee revenue and stagnant customer base. My question basically is, has any thought been given to approaching the Board of Supervisors, and particularly now that we have Mr. Gibson in place, for some sort of supplemental revenue sharing?
See if I can translate that. Does that mean, can we ask the county to give us some money?
Well, yes, that's exactly correct.
I'm sure that we can ask the
getting services that result from visitors coming to town.
We asked our fire department a couple of years ago to start keeping track of the number of medical calls, for example, that are related to tourists. If we can build a database that shows that we're incurring significant costs associated with providing services to tourists, then maybe we can make a case with the Board of Supervisors that some of the transient occupancy tax money that the county assesses from this community ought to come back to us to offset the cost of providing the services to tourists. I think the county administrative officer, Mr. Edge, would probably have apoplexy over the thought of having to return some of the money to a community services district, but my suspicion is that Los Osos has the same issue, Napomo has the same issue, and so forth, and maybe there's strength in numbers. And
maybe we could start the groundswell here.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Can we add to that that there's a possibility of increasing the transient occupancy tax, COT, for this purpose to send some back to the local community?
Right.
Okay, thank you. So I guess the recommended action is simply to receive the audit report. Do we need to do anything else? We don't need to take any kind of a vote, do we? So when I said thank you to Mr. Silva, that's we've done everything we're supposed to do. Okay, thank you. Let's move on to 8B.
Congratulate the staff for having such a clean audit report to present to us each time.
Agreed.
This time. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay, we have 8B, and this is the mid-year budget review, and we have two recommended action items: to receive and accept the mid-year budget review for 2006-2007. You recall it was just a one-year budget. And then to adopt Resolution 12-2007, amending the fiscal year 2006-2007 operating budget for the fire department. We include here, you've got plenty of attachments, which Alan will briefly go over, okay? We certainly gave you some revenue sheets by department that show what they look like based on what the actual expenditures were on December 31st and what we as staff know. There seem to be surpluses here and deficits here. What we decided to do this year is to let the surpluses, which are mainly, as Alan will review with you, increased property tax revenues. We want the majority of those to go into the reserves or actually to offset some of the deficits in the other departments, and Alan will hit on those larger deficits as well. But within these were about $25,000 worth of requests from the fire department that I think are reasonable, and actually I know they can be expended because they've made a commitment to do so before the end of this fiscal year, and I have itemized those on the second page of the staff report, and those include, for operational items, $7,000 for roof repair at the fire station. This is in conjunction with a grant project right now that they have to enhance the exhaust system. And so this gives us an opportunity at the same time that they're working on that system to go ahead and repair the roof. When we did our latest tabletop exercise for emergency command center, we agreed that we should have a backup server at the fire department in the case of an emergency, because that's where we're all going to go to work. And there is no backup server there. So we want to get that thing in place as soon as possible so that we know in the case of an emergency, when we go over there to open up that command center, we have that server there. And if something ever happens to the server here that is located at the administration division, we have a backup server. Of course, they need some new supply fire hose. They have had many incidences this year, and they've asked for $3,000 for that. I've listened to and been trying to be responsive about some pagers and communications equipment among their staff that includes and extends to the NCORE group and the fire reservists, and they've asked for $3,000 to update that equipment. They also have some increased staff training needs within $5,000 more for this fiscal year, and then they've got some mounting brackets that they want to install on this new rig that they're going to get so that they can attach the equipment. I find that these expenditures were reasonable. They did ask for more, by the way. They were very good at that. Actually, a couple of other departments did as well. But I think that given the fact that they did have a surplus in their department because of enhanced property revenues, tax revenues, that I thought these expenses were reasonable and asked for you to consider them today. But first, I'm going to turn it over to Alan and let him go through his financing and accounting presentation. And certainly, I will be available for any questions with regard to the resolution.
Okay. I'm going to discuss mostly, obviously I'll take any questions, but I'll start with discussing the meat of the report, the spreadsheets, the sheets with all the numbers on it. I just want to give a basic layout of it. The far left column is the description, be it the account or the fund or department. And then working to the right in the next column are the actual figures as of December 31st, 2006. And then to the next column is what I have projected the figure for that account or fund, as the case may be, will be at the end of the current fiscal year, June 30th, 2007. And then, again, next column over to the right is the fiscal year 06-07 requested was the original budgeted amount. And then the final two columns to the right is the variance between the projection and the original request shown as a dollar amount and then a percentage based on the original request amount. Then looking at the first sheet, the 2006-2007 budget summary, all funds and departments, the net deficit for the CCSD as a whole was originally projected would be $104,000. It's now projected to be approximately $324,000. Tried to do as accurate a projection as possible, probably a little bit conservative. And looking at the January activity, I would say it came in a little bit better than expected, but I'd rather it be better come June than worse than what is being shown here. And then, Carlos, if you could do the first slide, please.
Alan, can I ask you a question?
Yes,
at this point, when you say that the district's overall deficit is $100,000 and some change, if we weren't building, planning, designing capital projects, would we have a deficit?
Well, this is the operating budget. The amount of capital outlay is really very minimal. It's not capital projects. Very small. So would that change these numbers? Mm-hmm. No,
okay.
Is the short answer.
So you've separated capital projects from the operating budget completely.
It was that way. In all honesty, my experience has been those have not been separated. This is, I won't say unique. I've talked to a couple people and based on my experience and whatnot, this isn't unique to separate it by any means, and it's not that there's any shell game going on or anything wrong, but very more commonly everything runs through the operating. Nothing is posted directly to assets, and then at the end of the year, it's done via accounting journal entries. Move everything to construction in progress (CIP) or capitalize it if the project is done, as the case may be. So, how the CCSD is structured again is not unique, but it's not the most common way. Very often, more commonly, everything would go through the operating, and then my answer to you would be completely different.
Okay, so when we're tracking employee time for purposes of putting these numbers on these budgets, we're very carefully differentiating between time spent on capital projects versus time spent on operations?
The employee, the person's time who is not shown here is Bob's, the engineer, because his time is virtually 100% on projects. The other time is charged over between the departments in overhead. you know, as Mr. Silver was saying, there wouldn't be any change to the cash. And in honesty, I think the cash is the bigger picture, mm-hmm. And that wouldn't change one bit. But it would change the bottom line of the deficit, yes, because it wouldn't be showing here if other salaries were being charged directly to projects.
Okay. So, again, depending upon how you look at the numbers, you can set out the numbers in such a way that you can show there is no deficit.
I would not be comfortable in doing so, but you could do so.
My understanding that so the allocating of the salaries to each department, we could just come up with an overhead calculation and call it that instead. Would that make any difference?
Well, the overhead calculation moves between funds, mm-hmm. For instance, and departments, but it, within departments of the general fund, it won't change the bottom line of the general fund, and it doesn't change the bottom line of the district, but it would between the water, wastewater fund, and general fund, much lesser extent the resource conservation fund.
Would you be more comfortable doing that, using that mechanism?
Well, that's what we're doing now, yeah.
And Black and Veatch is going to be presenting some scenarios or some different methodologies with regard so that you all can see that and we can consider that as a staff with regard to the operations budgets and how we want to tax that.
I think this issue looms as a very important one because it's going to determine whether and how much of increase in the sewer and water rates we entertain.
Not so much because if it's a matter of being in the operating or in the CIP, they're building that based on what our cash needs are. And again, there would be no change in cash needs where the salaries are recorded.
I want to have a conversation with you about that after the meeting. Okay.
You know, Peter, I don't have, for the last 20 minutes, I have no idea what these guys are talking about. Do you?
Just keep your hands on your wallet.
Okay.
Okay. And the first slide up there is revenue. Service sales account for 48% of the CCSD's operating revenue. And the revenue from service sales, is expected to be approximately $42,000 higher than originally projected. But it's looking, it's very stagnant over the last few years. Property taxes account for 25% of the CCSD's operating revenue, and that's estimated to be $182,000 higher than originally projected. And I did confirm the data with the San Luis Obispo tax collector. That should be pretty accurate. The fire benefit assessment is the next largest revenue source for the CCSD, and it accounts for 5% of the overall revenue. Grant revenue and interest income both account for about 5% of the CCSD's operating revenue. While both of these revenue sources are projected to be approximately or over $200,000 greater than projected, the grant revenue is restricted and offset by increased expenditures, so we're no better off for that other than, you know, we have it's mainly related to the Guthrie Bianchini House and Garden. I trust I said that right. So, you know, that will be a resource for the community. And basically, every department's revenue is projected to be higher than originally budgeted, except for facilities and property department, mainly due to unrealized rents there, and the resource conservation department, and that's mainly due to lower than projected remodeling revenue. While the Parks and Recreation Department shows the largest increase in projected revenue, again, that's due to the increased grant revenue with offsetting increased expenditures, so nothing that we can spend there. And I did want to mention that the Chevron grant revenue came in exactly as projected, of course. It's important to note that the $300,000 received this year is the last installment, and so that revenue source is gone as of this point in time. Let's see.
Just out of curiosity, where it's at, where there's a zero for the amount is that it's under 1%? Is that
yes? The computer, if it's less than 0.5%, it rounds down to zero, even though there is something there.
Oh, so must be something. It's got a color.
let's see. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there should be four. Oh, they're tabs. Okay.
I apologize. This was the first time I'd submitted slides, and I probably didn't do it, so Carlos can load them easily. I'll go ahead and discuss it. In the 2006-2007 budget summary, expenditures will be the second slide, hopefully, but personnel costs account for 54% of the CCSD's operating expenditures. That percentage is consistent, if anything, a bit low based on my experience as far as that goes. Prior city I was with, it was approximately 60%. I know the state hospital, it's 85%, but you have a lot of medical salaries there, which raises things. So it's a very large number, of course, but that's pretty standard. Benefit costs have increased more than originally projected. Health insurance was the largest of those, retirement also. And there is also one-time leave cash outs and items, smaller items like that. Professional services are the next largest category of expenditure at 9% of the CCSD's operating expenditures. These are projected to be approximately $207,000 greater than originally budgeted, mainly due to the KEMAC legal costs and the extension of the lobbyist contract. I want to make one note. There was a typo I didn't catch in time. The spreadsheet shows the variance percentage for professional fees as NA. That should be a variance of 44.8%. I apologize for that oversight. Debt service accounts for 9% of our operating expenditures. These are going to come in materially as budgeted. Maintenance and repairs account for 6% of the CCSD's operating expenditures. They're projected to be about $44,000 higher than originally budgeted, some of which is a result of deferred maintenance, which always has a risk factor. And while the Guthrie Bianchini House and Garden expenditures represent the largest category of expenditure increase, as I've previously noted, those increased costs are offset by increased grant revenue. So basically a wash. Sludge hauling is projected to be about $118,000 higher than originally budgeted due to the fact that the original budget was built on the presumption the screw press would be online as of September 2006, and it isn't online. Next slide, please. Okay. This slide is the results from operations for each fund. Unfortunately, the blue column is the revenue, the burgundy or red column are the expenditures, and in every case, the red column is higher than the blue column. Obviously, we want to turn that around for the future. Next one, please. And the final slide is the CCSD's LAIF balance, where we have our reserves on deposit, anything that we don't need for operations that we keep in the bank. And I put the balances as of January 31st for the last 6 years. The decrease from January 31st, 2004 to January 31st, 2007 is slightly over $6 million, which represents about over 42% of the January 31st, 2004 balance. This is why cash is certainly at the top of my mind. I know my predecessor's mind. He was concerned about it, the auditors. You know, certainly wonderful things have been done with the money. You know, there's no question it hasn't been frittered away, but the trend can only go on for so long, obviously. And on top of that, the projected withdrawals for operations remaining this year, I project to be about $900,000. Just on the one largest ongoing CIP project, the Pine Knolls tank, should take $800,000 out of reserves. And then if we make the repayment to the Department of Health Services, that would be $1.5 million. Total of that is $3.2 million. So the reserves would decrease by that much more through this year and doesn't include any expenditures for other CIP projects. The rest of the spreadsheets are the individual departments' results of operations as of December 31st, 2006, and the projected results for the current fiscal year ended that will end June 30th, 2007.
Are you saying that next year the cash reserve is going to be around $4 million?
Well, right now, the end of January, it's 8.3. I see it going down a minimum of 3.2, so roughly $5 million beginning the next year, which, again, it's not that – I won't say those are inadequate – reserves, as was discussed earlier, there isn't a set formula. I did quite a bit of auditing. I worked at a CPA firm for 13 years. There's not a lot of set formulas with in GAAP. They don't say you have to have this or you have to have that. It's judgment calls.
Well, what's your judgment call? What, based on your experience, what? How much cash should a district of our size have in order to be a prudent fiscal enterprise?
Well, I would look at it, you have to take everything in an account. What do you have going on? If we had no large projects, all the infrastructure was 100% built, and we didn't have any large projects going on, $5 million seems very healthy. But if you look at the number of projects that are being done, or, you know, certainly in the works, it's not near enough to, you know, begin to cover them. So I would say the way it is right now, I don't want to say they're inadequate in terms of, you know, any fiscal irresponsibility. That's not the case. But to cover what we want to do, they're definitely inadequate.
Don't we have the issue of a lot of deferred maintenance also that mm-hmm. We should have more reserves just in case of something dire happening in that sense.
Yes, yeah. And there's two parts of it, as Mr. Silva said. 6 months is a general rule of thumb you like to have in the bank, you know, for operations. It's not like revenue is going to stop, but, you know, that's if there is a rule of thumb, 6 months is the most common. I've heard that used before myself. But that's only strictly for the results of operations. That totally ignores what we want to do for the CIP.
Yeah, but again, I think all of this has to be tempered with the reality that we're paying cash for everything. And when we get the Black and Veatch study, we may want to alter that policy and do what most prudent districts like ours do, and that is finance at least a part of the infrastructure costs that we're incurring.
Certainly, yes, financing is very common, obviously, and I know everyone is aware of that. There is a cost with that financing, you know, additional interest expenditures as far as that goes.
What is, in your judgment, what is debt service? What's the percentage debt service what I'm asking is, based on your experience, a district of this size, what is the prudent number for debt service? Is it 9%? Is it 15%? Is it 0%?
Our debt, and in all honesty, I've been a CPA for 24 years about. Been in the accounting field for roughly 30 years. I don't have a huge body of experience in municipal or special districts. So I'm not going to say I have a lot of experience to answer your question. I'm basing this more on general accounting experience. 10% is not unreasonable. Much more than 15, you mentioned that you're starting to get high. You know, it depends on, do you have the cash flows to cover it? Again, so many things are not a simple answer. It's, you have to look at everything involved as far as that goes. And what are you building? Infrastructure is very necessary. It produces revenue. So if the infrastructure is going to be producing more than enough revenue to pay for the cost of the financing, the cost of it, then debt is wonderful. I know in school we looked at various, one upper division class I had, the whole class was, we looked at financial statements and we had to give opinion, is this company healthy or not? And it was, they were generally trick questions in terms of, some financial statements would look just wonderful. The corporation went bankrupt 6 months after that point in time. Some looked terrible. And it ended up being Domino's Pizza. It was just growing hands over fist, as far as that goes. I don't like to give, and not trying not to answer you. I want to answer you whenever possible, but I don't consider it a real easy question to answer in terms of the big picture as far as that goes. I do expect to have more debt service. We certainly can absorb it as far as that goes. I wouldn't ever want to be above 20%. Unless there's a real good justification specifically to it, why there was.
And I know Black & Veatch is going to be covering that as well, so it's a great question for them next month. Let's get our money's worth out of those professional consulting services. I have to echo what Alan said and tell you that with my 15 or 16 years experience in public administration and or utilities or operations, at least at a public level, 6 months operations budget is probably pretty aggressive for a small organization like us, but I think it's prudent since we already have it there and it's established, why not go ahead and keep it and maintain it? As part of Black & Veatch's work, you're going to see that they're considering that there will be an annual amount that goes to reserves each year, and it will be part of the rate structure. If you don't like it, you're going to ask her to pull it out, and she's going to show you with the rate model what that does to rates. So we don't have that now. We do not have any reserves built into our operations budget. It is something that I'm used to seeing and most municipalities are used to doing, because that's how you continue to build those reserves and maintain them, because when an emergency happens and we have to pull from the funds, we've got to replace them somehow. The other statement that I was going to make with regard to reserves just lost me. It just escaped me.
That's called an expenditure.
I know. Yes, it did. Expended. I'll have to.
There's the note about the debt coverage ratio, which becomes part of this in the last paragraph there.
Well, what's coming to me is that in order to finance projects or to have debt service, we have to have a rate structure in place that sustains that. So the bondholders are going to want to say, "Can you sustain the payments?" And if you don't have the rate structure in place to at least cover operations, then that can't occur. And finally, the one simple statement that I think Alan made was with regard to our maintenance. I have to be completely frank with you. There have been maintenance items put in the budgets for water and wastewater that have been pulled. They were proactive maintenance items, and it was because you would have seen a larger number at the bottom. The expenditures would have been much higher than the revenues, and we met with staff and said, okay, can we hold out one more year? Well, that's not what you're going to see when Black & Veatch comes next month. They're going to have an amount each year that they say you've got to be able to maintain the systems, and here's what it's going to take to do that. And then those are items that we're not going to want to pull from future budgets, so that the system will continue to take care of itself and generate the revenues necessary to get debt for larger projects.
Well, will it be the job of the board to set some sort of policy that, say, when we get to 6 months and start going below that, then we begin financing? Because we are going to have more capital expenditures as we go forward with the water project.
It's one of the recommendations of Black & Veatch, and one of my goals is to have a policy that you guys will establish to do that.
shock to the overall.
The chart which you came up with just now, one that was not the pie chart. Well, the projected results from operations for 06-07. I realize that you've not been here long. Are we sliding into debt or are we maintaining? That's the real question.
Well, I would actually look at the next chart, if you're talking about sliding into debt,
yeah, right.
I mean, you can see the trend quite clearly. Obviously, you can't always have more expenditures than revenue. Mm-hmm. You get into debt. I'm not saying that would necessarily happen, but there isn't anything overriding to point to saying, okay, this is a one-time thing because of this, and at least in terms of the enterprise funds, which normally, and I do know enough to know that it's not very common for those to show a deficit. They're a business, so to speak. And obviously, a business shows a loss year after year. They go out of business as far as that goes. So it is, you know, if you have profitable year, and then a a down year and then profitable, well, that's one thing. You can certainly handle a loss year as far as that goes, but loss year after loss year after loss year, yes, do get in trouble that way. And one of the city managers I worked under, he had a lot of years of experience, so I would defer to his input. I know he was, when I was working on the budget with him, he was saying, you know, we really, you know, rule of thumb is you're putting away 5% a year. That's the target. Very few communities make that target, but that is definitely what you shoot for, to put into your reserves, rather than them going down. And I do realize, like I said, we're doing things with our reserves. We're not just using them for operations. That's when you really have an issue, and that's not what's going on here. As far as that goes, but we're also not putting in to the reserves from operations.
Well, you know, I guess we're really in the, what's the old term? Between a rock and a hard place. If we don't have some help via the pursuit of federal funding and state funds to authorize, and not just for the project that has been on the board for so long, but rather even just keeping up with improvements, minor improvements. I mean, we've got another project for the expansion of the water storage. All these projects can't be funded just until we come down to the bottom. So it's really going to be a pursuit for federal or state funding that's going to keep us going. Otherwise, we'll just have to mark time and place. Just so everybody put their thinking hats on and see if we could scramble up all the funds that we need. Doesn't look very good.
I just wanted also to say thank you for doing this draft, I guess draft is the title of it, of your review of the whole financial situation. It was very informative and very impressive that you took the time to start from day one and go through and give us this kind of analysis. I really appreciate it a lot.
Okay, thank you. It's obviously my job, but yeah, I appreciate it. Yes. So.
That was thorough. thank you.
I think we have one member of the public who would like to address the board on this issue, Jerry McKinnon.
Jerry McKinnon, a resident of Cambria. And I have a little stiffness in my backbone. I usually shake in my boots when I get up here before this group. But last night at the Air American Legion Executive Board they appointed me as being the spokesman for American Legion Post 432, which becomes now a lobbying force of over 300 men and women whose special interest is in Cambria and the operation and the maintenance of this building. We're having a difficult time balancing decisions made with the head and decisions made with the heart. And when it comes to saying we don't have enough money to do this or to do that is a nice blanket or a sour blanket to spread over the whole enterprise. But from what I understand, this Veterans Memorial Building is supported by property taxes. The property taxes have increased this year. Therefore, there should be additional money available to make the improvements on this building that keep it from becoming a liability rather than an asset. It takes a contractor who is a painter to paint the outside of this building where the rains are now penetrating raw wood. And we recognize what water does on wood. It's no good. We've got to get that fixed. And when we take a look down the street and see the Cambria Historical Society doing what it's doing, it's trying to raise a $1,300,000 to restore a dilapidated old house. Now, we've got to do something with this building so it does not create an eyesore in the community. Now, when I think of this building and when the American Legion thinks of this building, we think of it as a hall commemorating those men who gave their lives for this country. There were six in Cambria who gave their lives for this country. Seven, including Vietnam. We have a poster board across the street with names of men now who are serving their country that we hope to God they never become one of the seven. This building should be a shining star in the community. This building should be an attraction to the community where they come into town and see that indeed we honor and respect those who gave their lives for our country. We have to recognize that if we don't do the essentials, then we have our difficulties. So I'm suggesting to you as your employer, thank you very much for doing a good job in the things that you are doing, and especially thank you very much for not invoking the fees for nonprofit organizations to use this building. Because after all, this building is paid for by the taxpayers in town. This building is here for service to the town. It's not a money-making building. It's there to serve the public, and it is supported by the public by our property taxes.
Can you wind down, Jerry, please?
Yes. I'm all wound up. I have lots of things to say, but I'll end right there. Except, I would request that on your amending the budget for the fire department, you add an additional amendment to include $50,000 for the painting by contractor of the outside of the wood on this building. That's all I'm asking you to do. Just another $50,000, remembering that that $50,000 does not come from enterprise funds. It comes from property taxes. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. I'll entertain a motion.
Before we have a motion, Mr. President, just a short response to Mr. McKinnon's comments. I appreciate his continuing concern about the condition of this building. And I think we're all hoping that when we get through the Black and Veatch study, we keep referring to that, and I don't think we mean to necessarily postpone decisions like the one you're asking us to make and completely hanging our hats on the outcome of that study. But it is important in terms of a projection into the future about the revenues that we'll be able to raise versus the expenditures that we have to make, and I'm sure that this building will be considered as we get into that and figure out how we're going to go forward financially.
well, and along with that, figure out how the building could pay for itself. It now costs us considerably. It's a negative drain on the budget to maintain it.
And we have a very good management staff here. I have met with Ben Bohr. We have items, you know, projected for this facility, and I'm very trusting in his ability to lead and manage this structure among the others that the district owns. And so I am in constant communication with him with regard to this facility. Mr. McKinnon and I can agree on some things he said today, which I'm probably going to surprise him. That is that this is a facility that is used by the community, and thanks to the generosity of this board of directors, the majority of the users who use it do use it for free. That means no cost to anyone who is using this facility, with the exception of some who have paid courses and or have things that are open to the public, but they are a private or a private nonprofit organization. He did mention the fact that we are looking at the fact that you have currently in your fees, user fee schedule, a nonprofit rate for use of the hall. It is half the rate of the folks who use it who are private users. And it is something that we will have a discussion about, and I'm certain that Mr. McKinnon will be very active in that communication as well. And it's something that we just need to look at when we compare this year's deficit in the facilities and properties budget, in which the Vets Hall is looking at a $67,584 deficit. If you were to take into consideration what he's offering as hiring a painting contractor, which I don't even know could be done before the end of the fiscal year, that would make that deficit about $120,000. The monies that are left over from the fire department surplus, as a result of them being another general fund department, they are the ones who get the largest amount of the property taxes. You know, they've got $107,000 projected surplus. It helps offset this facilities and properties deficit. So it's a balancing act, and with all due respect, that's exactly what my job is, and the department head's job here is to look at all the needs of the district and say, okay, which ones can we fund, which ones can wait until the next fiscal year, and I'm certain if Jerry will meet with Ben, and Ben can bring those to the table when we meet as a staff with regard to the next fiscal budget, they can be considered at that time.
I think what's being echoed here by people to my left and people to my right is that just like other governmental agencies, we're all experiencing some very tight revenue streams. And like San Simeon during the summer, it could dry up, and that clearly is the trend. Our revenue stream is drying up, if it has not already dried up. So what I would suggest to all of us who love Vets Hall, is maybe it's time to, instead of looking to us, which has been a trend that I've seen the last couple of years, maybe it's time to take a page from John F. Kennedy and use a model of those citizens who raised, I think, over $1 million to buy the Fiscalini Ranch. Maybe it's time to ask our citizens to raise $50,000 to paint Vets Hall. I don't think that's out of sight or unreasonable. And I'm sure staff would be able to facilitate and help, but I just don't think we have the money. But anyway, is there a motion that someone wants to make?
I'll move the recommended action.
Second the motion.
All those in favor, please state aye.
Aye.
None opposed. Motion carries unanimously. 8C. Tammy or Art?
Okay.
Don't
yes.
jump.
8C. I'm going to start this out, and Art is my partner on this. This is with regard to the build-out reduction program. We have two action items we're requesting today. One is to adopt Resolution 15-2007 approving a no-cost voluntary lot merger program to property owners within the CCSD. And the second is where Art will step in, and that's to provide direction to staff regarding providing interim funds to the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County for implementation of the build-out reduction program. With regard to Resolution 15-2007, and this is the lot merger program, What's going on here is, as a result of the Citizens Finance Committee for the Build-Out Reduction Program, your Open Space Committee and your PROS Commission, they have recommended that we move forward with the voluntary lot merger option. And thanks to staffer Corey Ryan, other staff members that we have at the CCSD, and those two, the committee and the commission, we've developed what we provided to you as a pamphlet, a program that helps facilitate inquiries when they come into our office as to what can I do with my vacant lot. Some folks think there are no options, and we present here about five options that they can do. Obviously, they can transfer a water allocation to their vacant lot. They can sell their vacant lot. They can purchase an unallocated water connection, which is part of the build-out reduction program, so it is actually pending final adoption of that. They can donate their lot to a land trust. And then finally, they can merge their lots. And actually, if it's a lot that they already own and it's next door, they can do that, or they can approach a neighboring owner. Well, as a result of the lot merger, folks came forward and said, you know, it's confusing when you go to Slo County and try to merge a lot. We don't know what to do. We don't know where to start. The paperwork is cumbersome. And where do we even go? And, you know, I get told different stories, and how does it happen? So what we did is we found that we could contract here locally with a title company. They provided a proposal, which is attached, and for $75, they will facilitate the process for us. So what that means to a lot owner is they merely will come here to the CCSD, to Corey. She'll have the application. They'll fill it out. It's a simple one- or two-page document, as I recall. And then the title company will take it from there. And they set forth the steps that they will do in order to actually effectuate the entire merger process, where the customer at that point, once they leave the CCSD, they'll hear back when it's finished, okay, and they get the notice that the lots have been merged. There is a filing fee with that application with San Luis Obispo County. It's $60. It has been waived in the past by prior supervisors, and it's my goal as part of this program, and one of the reasons why I tell you right now, if you approve the action today, I'm saying it's going to be less than a couple $100 in order to facilitate each merger. That includes some recordation costs as well. I'm going to visit with Supervisor Gibson and ask that he waive the fees, that he gets staff to waive that $60 application fee, because we're actually doing the majority of the work here at the district and with the title company. And they're pretty much just doing ministerial steps. I'm certainly not taking light of the fact that there will be some staff impact, but it will be minimized based on what we're going to be doing. I think he'll be supportive of that. I certainly don't want to make that decision for he or his planning staff, but I want the opportunity to tell you that maybe in the beginning it might be charged to us, because we do have a few people who are going to serve as guinea pigs for us. They're standing by waiting to see if you approve this action, and then we're going to try to get it through the process to see how it is or how it could be made better after they go through. So I am committed to having that meeting with Supervisor Gibson and seeing if he will, during this time period that we get these mergers going, if he'll waive that $60 fee, which in a sense means that it will just cost $75 plus recordation. That's a pretty good price to pay. It helps facilitate the build-out reduction program, which is counting on about 35% of what we're estimating conservatively that many lots will be merged. We would hope that maybe getting an early start, jump start on this, that maybe we can get more. And what that ends up doing is reducing the cost to us as customers on our water bill and reducing the potential of the connection fee or the impact fee when development may occur. I do want to tell you that the funding would come from your build-out reduction program funds. You know, we've stated in the past, and you've approved ordinances and policies with regard to sale of commercial EDUs. Well, we've had one, and so we have about $24,000 in the bank. You've agreed and approved a couple of land sales and specified that the funds must be attributed to the build-out reduction program. We have that money as well. So we right now have in the build-out reduction program funding, and while it may seem minimal, about $30,000. So I feel very comfortable getting started on this element of mergers and helping to facilitate the process and get the BRP and to show the seriousness and the commitment of the staff and this board and the community to getting these lots merged and retired and these potential building sites off the roster. So with that, I was going to pass it on to Art and let him talk to you about his communications with the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County and how he wants to potentially provide some interim funding in that regard. Art.
Thank you. The direction we were given by the board was to meet with the Slo Land Conservancy to discuss an agreement to implement the build-out reduction program. Their piece would be acquiring the lots with the funds that we give them pursuant to the build-out reduction program guidelines. After discussing it with Bob Hill, for a while it became evident that setting this up in an agreement involved much more. It involved us on our side being able to modify our data collection and procedure and our data processes so that we can keep track of what we're doing, how the program is succeeding, and for us to be able to have an informational database that we can look at any time and find out what type of lots and other things are being retired. So having it set up correctly is probably the most important thing at the beginning, and it was much more work than we thought than other than just drafting an agreement. Part of their constraints is that Bob Hill works full-time and is quite busy, and what I had suggested that we consider is a temporary agreement with them to provide a reimbursement for a part-time person for them to free Bob Hill up to sit down in some lengthy meetings to sit down and work out all these issues. A lot of it will involve work on our part that we've already started internal discussions on to make sure everything fits. One of the issues that we're trying to address is, let's say they acquire a lot, and how does the information translate into our system through their system? Should they have access to our geobase and a database regarding the programs and ownerships and things like that? So it's going to involve some computer expertise also that we're going to come back or include possibly in some of this money too to make sure all our programs fit. The database that we developed some time ago is yet to be updated. We have to do that also because things have happened through ownership and acquisitions and retirements that are not reflected in that particular database. So some of this money will be dedicated to get up to speed in that also. So with the approval of this amount, what we hope to do is come back with that memorandum of understanding and possibly a proposal regarding information system services to make sure all the programs fit together. So when we get started, hopefully within this year, we'll have a program that can take off and operate on its own.
What is the $50,000 going to get us?
Well, part of it is to pay the Slow Land Conservancy for a part-time person to do a lot of the work that Bob Hill is doing now. That would free him up to commit to a certain number of hours to sit down with all of us to develop the systems necessary for us to be able to draft an appropriate agreement on how they're going to work. Part of the problem is for them to develop a cost proposal on what they would need to implement the BRP is how much time, effort, and money they're going to have to spend in the process. And so this will help us to look at that and get a better idea of what type of work they're going to have to put in. The other is the part of this money is to be spent on an information systems type person, and we'll bring these agreements back to you for your consideration at that time, but to look at having our build-out reduction data updated and kept up to date and in a manner that if, let's say, Corey deals with a lot retirement and that is complete, she can input into the system, or there's some method of putting that information into the system so all of us, including the Slow Land Conservancy, will know that that's taken place and that lot's no longer one of the lots that we're looking at. We don't have that now, and it's currently out of date over a year. And there's a lot of decisions that all of us make today that would be greatly enhanced if we had that information. And part of the work we do on acquiring lots and acquiring retirements, it starts a research project every time we want to make a recommendation to you. So part of this money is to update that database to make it usable to all of us for this program in the future. But like I said, this is just allocating it in the budget. We'll come back with the agreement with another board action and say this is specifically what we're going to do and what the money's to be spent for.
And it's actually, you're giving us direction today. We didn't allocate it in the budget. Art wasn't available for me to get an exact amount. And he's right, we would bring back the contracts. Plus, given the budget status, You know, I try to be very conscientious with regard to where the money's going to come from. The BRP funds right now are sitting at about $30,000. I know there's another $10,000 coming into that fund because of a property transaction, and then I've got a couple to discuss with you today. So I know there's some funds. I did not feel comfortable today asking for a budget amendment until I knew where the numbers were going to be and the figures would be, and I had what he anticipated, or at least some cost proposals from these various tasks. So we're not asking for a budget amendment today.
Do you see this as a one-time charge or coming back again?
No, it'll be a few different type charges with regard to, you know, the IT work, the technology work.
I was thinking of ongoing once the program's established.
It will be, but we hope by then we will have had the rate discussion, and you will hear from Black and Veatch and know that there's going to be a date with regard to that one component for the build-out reduction program attached to the rates. So once revenues start coming in, then I'll be more confident in ongoing continued expenses.
So basically you're asking us to kickstart the build-out reduction program.
And we're only looking at those funds that are already generated for that purpose. It's not going to take money away from anything else. This money sits there for the BRP.
And I assume once it gets going, it's going to support itself because money should be coming in.
Yeah, the whole purpose, I mean, the whole goal of BRP regarding financing is that it supports itself.
Yeah. Just a general question. The reduced rates that we're trying to institute to merge lots and so on, there would be no question of these lots ever being built on. They will be restricted.
Well, just to clarify, you know, obviously if somebody merges a next-door neighbor lot with their lot and they wanted to expand their home, you know, it's included as their gross structural area, and I certainly don't want to get into land use planning here. Mm-hmm. But they could enhance, they could build a guest house on that property. So it wouldn't be that they would be restricted like an open space or a conservation easement.
And we're not talking lot consolidation, which the county does now, which doesn't erase the lot line. It just provides an overlay agreement that they promise in the future not to build anything else other than one structure or one dwelling on it. What we're talking about in this merger is actually eliminating the lot line, so what would be left is one lot, which under the current zoning only allows one residential use.
That raises the question. Nothing in this document speaks to that idea.
So if we had a database to look at right away and say, oh, yes, you qualify, we may be able to find the answer right away, but it's not as easy as it would be if we didn't have this in place.
And we can find that information because we have links to the county assessor's maps and we're able to help make those determinations.
So are you saying in this marketing or education plan we wouldn't encourage people whose houses are built on more than one lot, you know, two 25-feet lot, to go ahead and merge it through this process with the title company?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think our goal was really to focus on the building sites. I mean, it's not a bad idea to include the others.
But we
are spending BRP
inventory
money for it.
You know, I'd have to refer back to the build-out reduction program, so that's an excellent question to take back to them in their meeting and make sure that when we did the calculations with the Roger Dale, that he included that. Because all the costs that are associated and the expenses for the program are all calculated based on mergers and lot requirements, so it's an excellent question to ask.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, as I sat in on those earlier, before we had the committee, that they counted all the lots that, you know, like, as I say, my lot was counted as two. So if we're going to reduce the number, it seems we have to merge them.
I'll confirm and bring that back.
If we get the county to waive the application fees, I mean, anyone who comes in and wants to merge something probably would qualify for the program. The question is whether we can spend BRP money to pay the $75 for the title service.
Okay, thanks.
So what are you saying, the 50K would come from the build-out reduction fund?
Yes, we already have $30,000 in the fund. We expect another 10. So 50 was just an estimate. We would come back with the contracts that would nail down the dollars so you can approve them for this specific purpose.
Okay, Wayne Parrick wants to speak on this issue. Wayne? Had you finished, Art? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Wayne Perrick. I'm a resident of Cambria. I'm also a member of the Open Space Committee, chaired by Ben Bolden, and chairman of the Build-Out Reduction Finance Committee. There's many positive outcomes, certainly, from build-out reduction. The one that is certainly my favorite looking at today, and there are 1,360 lots in adjacent ownership, we found in our study. Of those, 986 were candidates, if you will, for merger opportunities. And we assumed in our build-out reduction program that we would take advantage of 394 of those. So if you look again back at that 879 lots that ultimately we have to purchase, obviously if that number goes up, the $39 million goes up. Conversely, of course, if we can bring that number down, then the cost of build-out reduction goes down. So there's a lot of incentives for lot mergers, as Ms. Rudock expounded on, and we would certainly like to exceed our goal of 394 lot mergers, and this program in front of you gets us started, and we'd like to start on that as soon as possible. So it's important, certainly, to our team that we approve the resolution for a no-cost voluntary lot retirement program that's in front of you. And with regards to the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo, they've been a great partner throughout the process, and certainly any support providing them with interim funds to support build-out reduction, we support. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Wayne.
Mr. President, may I take the opportunity while Wayne is at the podium to acknowledge the work he does for the Build-Out Reduction Program on his own time. Those 16 presentations that Art and I have made, he has been there on his own time. He has gone traveled throughout the state on his own time and his own money. He hasn't even submitted a reimbursement to the CCSD when we've made the Build-Out Reduction Program presentation. He continues to be committed. He showed up today. We don't invite him, so I want the public to be aware because I feel a little guilty with all the time. He's become a very good friend, and he is definitely a good ally to have with regard to this program. I don't want to forget his wife, Ann. She and he traveled to San Diego last week to make their comments with regard to the emphasis being placed on the Build-Out Reduction Program and all the work the Citizens Committee and the PROS Commission and the Open Space Committee are doing to show the commissioners that there is other work going on and that citizens are committed to the work that we're doing in the project. So I certainly believe he deserves your acknowledgement and recognition.
Amen.
Well, I guess, Wayne, if you continue doing the good work, you can rest assured you continue not to be invited.
In my own mind, that if we do this and we subsidize somebody's merging two lots together, they won't then turn around and build a $1 million house on our subsidy of $75. You know? In other words, there is no way that that will become a buildable lot.
Well, let us look at it. I don't necessarily want, and I'm sure the board doesn't want, because the whole to pay for a merger that will create a developable lot,
right,
that's outside our program. And if the direction is this money and this program is to implement the build-out reduction program, right, and we can make the decisions at a staff level to ensure, hopefully, that doesn't happen. But it doesn't mean that somebody that doesn't own eight lots who wants to merge them all doesn't tear down their small house and build a $1 million house. It just, we don't want it to increase the number of building sites.
And therefore the connections. So, you know, if it's got the $1 million house, which quite frankly that's about what it costs to build a house in Cambria today, you know, it's still the one connection that we're shooting for. That's our goal, is the one water connection. Whether those eight lots become one or those two or three become one, no matter what the size of the home is. And you know, given that you made that recommendation, obviously if you're not comfortable with that very first paragraph in the voluntary merger page, it's the very last page of your document, you're going to see that one of the benefits we've listed is by merging your vacant parcel with an active service parcel, you'd be able to expand your home on the vacant parcel, build a guest house or a detached garage, or keep it vacant to ensure your view or leave space between you and your neighbors. If you want that reworded in order to meet what, you know, the board is intending, then we need to work on that language. This page for voluntary mergers, just for the public's information and yours, will change after your action today, because we'll want to incorporate some language that says, you know, we're willing to step up and pay the fees to CCSD and facilitate the merger process.
What paragraph were you, sometimes you go too fast.
I'm sorry, right on the yellow page, the yellow page in your pamphlet, and look in the very first paragraph under benefits of merging parcels. And I was addressing Director Childicott's comment with regard to home expansion. Obviously, it is a benefit. We accommodated a lot owner last month or a couple of months ago, the Mastins, in order to have just the gross structural area, even though they're leaving their lot as open space. If that's a requirement, we need to know that so that we can make this part of the process.
Mr. President, we're not a land use planning agency.
After today, when we amend based on your action this voluntary merger page, because someone did ask me at break as well, we'll have this available in the office. We'll have this available on our website. And for the public's information, it's a pamphlet that has a one-page spreadsheet that has it color-coded what your options are, and then it has that same color-coded page in the back that's more explanatory to tell you give you the details of what to do or how to proceed with whatever action you might be interested in. Corey Ryan is a staff member. If anyone has any questions, they can contact her at 927-6223, and I'd give it about a week to be up on the CCSD website.
Could you clarify the change you're making?
We'll be making the change on that yellow page for voluntary mergers to include the fact that the board has approved, based on your action, the fact that we will pay to facilitate lot mergers, okay? So it'll be one-stop shopping, so to speak. You know, they'll do it all here in Cambria rather than having to travel to San Luis Obispo. And then we'll contract with First American Title to do all the work, the title work.
Just to keep this, it does talk about vacant land, and back to my question about a house being built on two lots and getting it merged. It's the famous Cayucas house that got sawn in half,
right?
Which we want to avoid in the future and whatever. So it seems to me some point we need to address that, if not in this document. And
okay. We'll bring you a question, a response back to that question next month. It's a good question. Thank you.
I'm ready to move the recommended action.
Second the motion.
All those in favor, please state aye.
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 None opposed. Motion carries unanimously. Let's move on to 8F.
No, we did Kim Limberry earlier. 8F, we already did her. You missed it. No, that one was pulled. Excuse me, we're having a little sidebar here. 8F is to adopt 8F is to adopt resolution 11-2007 approving Wayne and Mady Gracie agreement regarding Pine Knolls tank replacement project, and I'm going to let District Council Art Montandon report on that item.
Yeah, we had hoped to have the agreement ready for your approval today. We have it in draft form, and we still have to add easement descriptions and other things into it. The Gracies have yet to see a form for their approval, and I believe this meets the requirement. I just wanted, because it was on the agenda, to give you a status on it so you know that it's in the works. And as you know, I've been involved with...
Well, before you... President, question. Will this agreement resolve all of the outstanding claims against the district made by the Gracies?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? None from the public. This is now the public comment portion of the general meeting. I've received no comment forms. Meeting stands adjourned. I guess we'll move on to the closed session at Tamsin. Thank you.